All right, in terms of the agenda, we are on item number one, which is opening and welcome by the chairperson. Before we start, I really would like us to collect it so that this vehicle can move smoothly and not find potholes in it, you know? Along the way. All right. Shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Greet the honourable members and greet the honourable deputy minister and his entourage, and I'd also like to greet the hard-working staff members and all guests present here this morning. I wish to take this opportunity and welcome all of you to this meeting. It is a very important meeting whereby we will be receiving a briefing from the department on their financial and non-financial performance. Our focus area will be on the fourth quarter expenditure patterns for 2015-16 financial year, as well as the third quarter 2016-17. Just as a reminder, the primary objective in the mandatory committee, as provided for in the Money Bill Act, is to ascertain whether the spending patterns of departments are in line with voted budgets and tabled strategic plans and annual performance plans. Those were tabled, and the department committed itself, and the department also provided the projected quarterly expenditure report. So you see, we're not going to ask for too much. We're actually going to rely on what you said to us you will be doing. So as we engage on the presentation, the committee wishes to gain clarity on spending and performance issues and on ensuring value for money. It is about value for money. Not only for MPs here, but for all tax-paying South Africans. I do want to conscientize you about this and where this money comes from, because we owe it to them to use it responsibly. The tax-paying South Africans wish to see that their taxpayer funds are spent in accordance with principles of equity, efficiency, I repeat, efficiency, and effectiveness, I repeat, effectiveness, as envisioned in the Constitution. As you spend, our interest will be more on the impact that you may see. The committee will seek to clearly understand all critical areas of budget spending performance and its service delivery implications for targets contained in the National Development Plan and the medium-term strategic framework. Okay. No, that's fine. Then, shall I then invite all of you to participate, and hoping that we will have fruitful deliberation and robust engagement. And I'm saying robust because much as government has made provision for a budget for the work of the, or all the strategic objectives of the department, we would like to indeed engage to check on whether that budget has been responsibly used. And then we're looking forward indeed to a constructive and meaningful engagement. Thank you for you very much. Thank you. All right. Thanks, Ben. In terms of the budget, in terms of the agenda, we are now on item number 2, which is apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister. We have 3 apologies this morning. We have an apology from Mr. Sheikh Imam and from Mr. Gwangwa, and then we have one from Ms. Manana, who is running late.
Alright, thank you so much. These are the apologies. We take note of the apologies. We will then move straight on to item number 3, which is presentation by the Department of Basic Education. Honourable Deputy Minister, before the presentation by the HOD, I would like you to give us an overview of your department. Over to you, sir. Yes, Dr. P.
Yes, my apologies for the interruption, but can we get an indication if we are going, if the department is going to get a specific time allocation? I can see that there's 3 presentations here, and I just want to make sure that the whole time is going, not going to be taken up by the presentation and then no time left for the deliberation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just a correction, Dr. P. There are 2 presentations. The other one is for reference, for your reference. But you can, when you engage, you can use that information, you know, to strengthen the robustness of the HR. Yeah, that's true. All right. Thank you very much. Shall we then proceed? Over to you, Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and may I congratulate you on this very important portfolio to be chairing right now. This is indeed the heartbeat of the pulse of Riverside, and certainly thank you for the invitation. May I, before I just make some opening remarks, introduce also for the first time our to this committee here. He's been with us, Director General, Mr. Mweli, on my seat on my left hand side. He's the Director General for the Department of Basic Education. We have acting Director General and now has been permanently appointed some 5 months ago, I think about August last year. And sitting on my right is our CFO, and behind me we have Mr. Tabani, who is responsible for strategic planning, and we have Mr. Mafoko, who is responsible for infrastructure. So the manner in which we're going to proceed with the matter, there are two presentations. The CFO will be doing the first part of it, followed by Mr. Tabani, who will deal with the strategic planning, and Mr. Mafoko will then, who's also here, Mafoko seated to my left behind me, would be doing infrastructure. We also have in our midst the DDG for administration, Mr. Anton Skuman. So let's say that all records are represented here in the community, for the white community. and then we also have Mr. Mahada from the Superintendent General's offices. Chairperson, I don't want to be too long because you have
absolutely right. It escaped my mind that one of the chairperson of the audit committee could not make it. Unfortunately, we couldn't get a letter of apology from him, and we also felt that we couldn't apologize on his behalf by writing a letter for the chair of the portfolio committee. He couldn't make it for this meeting. The director for internal audit fell ill yesterday, and just when we were preparing to come to the committee, I received the information that she wouldn't be able to make it, to put off. And that's why the 2 of them are not here. I'm sorry. I should have said that this apology when he calls for apology.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, we cannot predict illnesses, but can we be send the latest reports and we will look at them and apply our mind whether to call them again or to call the department again, because exactly what we do in this committee, we following the money and the usage of the money and the profitability of the money. So those people are very critical to this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to check quickly because JC said something very interesting when I was starting to talk on the internal committee chairperson, that he could not apologize on his behalf. Because according to me, and you can correct me, Chair, if I'm wrong, isn't the internal committee chairperson reporting to the DG?
Concern that we made our invite on time, as we have correctly indicated. The accounting officer, the chief financial officer, the audit committee chairperson, and the internal audit. If they are not part of this meeting, and we are talking about, we are doing the oversight, and some of the questions that we want to pose to relevant people that are doing the actual work. And to come in the meeting for them without an apology, you know, it's really unacceptable to us. Because it means to say that we did indicate before, Honorable Chair, that if we invite the accounting officers or relevant people and they don't come, we're going to send them back. Because we need information for us to do an oversight. And we can't just accept the Deputy Minister is here. And the staff is not here. You know, I understand the one that is sick. But you know, if you are not coming to the meeting, you make an apology, you do it in writing. This is another thing.
Thank you so much for all your input. If I may rule of this matter, indeed the accounting officer is here. But then, the one who will request that in future, let's uphold professionalism. You will then carry that message to the chairperson of the audit committee with regard to a written apology if he is not attending or she is not attending the meeting. All right. Thank you so much. And then in future, I'm talking to the staff now. We must also invite the chairperson on the monitoring and evaluation unit. Because all departments have that. Regardless of that, we still find mistakes in the such units. And we don't take it kindly because they are there for a particular purpose. That's why you expect then efficiency and effectiveness in your both financial and non-financial performance. But thank you very much. Shall we then hand over to the accounting officer? And welcome, and we're looking forward to a very good, oh sorry, no, it's not accounting, but both of you introduced, we're looking forward to a good relationship,
yeah.
And your cooperation will be highly valued. Thank you. Over to the...
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and may I also express my disappointment at the absence of the two officials who were invited. The one is an independent official, and the other is indeed the one who comes to the Director General in his capacity as accounting officer, but I imagine we could not anticipate that the individual was going to fall ill, but keep the assurance that even if they are not invited at the next meeting, they will be present. So we give you that undertaking. I think it's important that they make themselves available, this is an important committee and the issues that you raise are very critical. I also think that it's quite interesting that you inviting the representative from the monitoring evaluation. I imagine it's the representative from the presidency. Would that be the person that you're referring to, or is it somebody from within the department? I'm not sure. Oh, in the department. Oh, responsible. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. Okay. No. There is a dedicated person who undertakes that task because the lady, she basically is responsible for preparing the documentation when we report quarterly to cabinet in relation to the progress of our performance outcomes. So we will ensure that she is also available the next time. Chairperson, I'm not going to be too long. I could speak about education forever. But before I just make a few remarks, just to say to you that at 12 o'clock, I have to receive a delegation from overseas, partly domestic and partly abroad. So if the committee would grant me leave to leave at 12 o'clock, and I will stay there here until 12 o'clock, I'd really appreciate it, of course.
Hello, I was just waiting for the Honourable Deputy Minister to say a word about the absence of the Minister, because we really want to see all the captains of the DPA.
Trying to strengthen the trust between us and the people and the ministers of accounting politically on the other way. So it's not that members are just being demanding, but it is expected of the ministers of accounting. And also, we don't have the ministers of politics. Yeah. And then, accounting officer, you can just emphasize to all the role players to take this initiative seriously. We appreciate. We want to assist the government to achieve on its vision, 2020 vision. Thank you for watching.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I can assure you that Minister would have been here, but she's engaged with oversight herself. There are so many pressing, compelling matters that she has to deal with. And we do take the committee very, very seriously. For example, the DG, the accounting officer, was in the portfolio committee for basic education, and he took the option to release him, and he started there because of the importance of this particular discussion, even though he's not going to make the presentation, but we will certainly alert the minister to the importance of this, and certainly I would persuade the minister to be present the next time.
Thank you
very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, what we're going to try to do is to give you an honest account of our progress in relation to two courses that we referred to in your opening remarks. We would do so in terms of, as you correctly pointed out, the performance outcomes that we commit ourselves to, and our performance, whether we were full expenditure or under expenditure, and I think to explain why, where there has been under expenditure, what the causes were, and what mitigating steps we would take in order to ensure that they are able to address the matter. I can assure you, as a member, as part of the executive, to certainly that we take the responsibility of accounting to our committees in Parliament very, very seriously, and indeed the presence of senior officials here would clearly indicate the importance that we attach to this particular committee. Amongst the issues that have been raised in the past were the issues of delivery of, some water. Okay. Delivery of workbooks. And we can say to you that not only in the past two quarters, but in the past few years, we've improved significantly, where we have almost 100% delivery across the province. And if you look at the quantum, more than 55 million books are being delivered to each school, so every learner gets delivery of that. It's quite remarkable on its own. We have, and these are just very brief opening remarks, the issue of math literacy. Now, that's quite remarkable because we've exceeded the 3 million number in terms of making our adults functionally literate in numerate. We're very proud of that program because not only has that program contributed to the literacy and numeracy of our adults in mother tongue, but also in English as an additional language. And they get independently tested in the test before they say that you've passed. And not very long ago, I had the pleasure and privilege of handing over certificates in Taung. And you see these old people out there with so much of pride because of an affirmation of their dignity. However, in terms of Karigure, there are two streams. And one is from allocation of government, where government has allocated resources to Karigure, and the other is to increase the number through the expanded public works. So whilst it's much easier to manage our system efficiently internally, when we rely on another department, you find delays, and you would find an explanation and account for that in terms of that particular area. With regard, and I'm not going to go through the whole spectrum, with regard to infrastructure, there too, colleagues will probably be aware that there are three streams. The first is the ACIDI program, it's the Accelerated School Infrastructure Development Initiative, which is coordinated by the President, and that is to replace MUST and unsafe schools, holy boats, MUST and unsafe schools, and also to provide basic services such as water, sanitation, electricity, certainly speak to the heart of a dignified environment for learners and teachers. I think we've done extraordinarily well. I do remember that the last time that I addressed this committee here, we were on 104 schools, if my memory serves me correct. We have now practically completed them. In fact, we could say delivered because the schools are being occupied 166, which means that effectively more than a school per week on average has been delivered. And it's just an ordinary school. These are state-of-the-art schools, and the principal beneficiaries there are the Eastern Cape, obviously, where MUST schools are still a phenomenon. They eradicated all the other provinces, and the second biggest beneficiary is the Eastern Cape. I mean, the Western Cape, which has received two schools. And they are in the historically disadvantaged areas, and certainly we would certainly welcome the committee to go to one of the schools, and the ministry would like to extend such an invitation to see and feel the joy and the delight when the school is formally handed over. Now, here too, we have a challenge, and the challenge is particularly in the Eastern Cape. Now, Chairperson, I want to share with the committee that the Eastern Cape has the most schools, got more than 5,254, and I speak from memory, it's not in the nutshell here, schools. And from there, there's more than 1,000 schools that have less than 135 learners, which means that they are not viable. You have schools with a learner population of about 10 or 12 or 15. Now, it may be a mass school. The question is whether you want to replace the school with another school or whether you want to close the school and merge it with the school. Now, the process of merger has become more complicated because the courts have pronounced themselves in terms of a very intense collaborative process, which means that the community must be fully consulted, the educators must be fully consulted, the members of the governing body must be fully consulted, if there are judicial authorities that have to be consulted, and others, all relevant stakeholders must be consulted before a decision is taken. But beyond that, if you're going to merge or close school, it would mean, have you provided adequately for transport from point A to point B where learners are going to be traveling? Have you provided adequately for teacher post-provisioning and a range of other matters? Now, we've done extremely well in the consultative process. But what we can share with you is that what we have a problem in the Eastern Cape, we don't sit back and say, sort it out, because there are inefficiencies in the system, and I want to say to you quite upfront. We've established a dedicated team from the National Department of Basic Education to support the Eastern Cape in terms of that. And there's more than 1,200 schools that have to be merged, rationalized, or closed in the Eastern Cape alone. But if we succeed in that, it would effectively mean that we would be freeing a great deal of resources and improving qualitatively those schools over there. So that process there has held back the delivery. But beyond that, what I could share with you, this would be my concluding comments, which you would not find in the report, is that we take this matter so seriously that the Deputy Minister of Basic Education and the Deputy Minister of Public Works have already met twice with the implementing agents to say, we're not just going to wait for a report. We're going to engage with you to find out precisely where you are, what are the constraints, and what you must do better and more efficiently. I can share with you that already really, there has been significant improvement. We have experienced some 2.5 years ago where we basically, with the Minister of Finance, so the current former Minister of Finance and Deputy Minister of Basic Education, met with all the implementing agents, indeed had to go beyond that to meet with the contractors in the presence of the implementing agents and engage with them, and that contributed to markedly positive outcomes. We do believe that we are on the cusp of far greater delivery out here. But what is holding us back is not the ability to deliver. What is holding us back is indeed the process with regard to the completion of the mergers and rationalization. Because if we do it wrong, then the application is gone to the High Court, the matter is held back, and rather than, you know, instead of losing 3 months, you might lose as much as 6 to 9 months, simply because the matter goes to court, it's not there, it goes on appeal, and that creates inordinate delay. The Western Cape has had the experience. We've learned from the Western Cape and their experiences. And what we've done here, we've made a special framework, a step-by-step guide for all provinces. So if there is a closure or a merger or rationalization, this is what you have to do. So in the plain language, so that any senior official would be able to follow the steps that are necessary, so that if at all we have to be challenged at any time, we would have certainly complied materially with the new process. Chairperson, I would say the dashboard would be a good indication of the general performance of the department. From where I sit, and I certainly am partial because I am within the department, I do believe that we have a hard-working team of women and men, and led by Mr. Mueli, who certainly have education at heart. My final remark is we've done something quite extraordinary in the past 2 terms. Every quarter, and I know department in the country does, but I think this has contributed very directly to the stability within the environment. We meet every quarter, that is the minister, deputy minister, director general, super, deputy director general, and all directors general in the country at district level. So we meet all the district directors, and we discuss issues that combat education. And it's purely apolitical issues that we have to deal with, and the incredible networking that takes place across districts and across provinces have contributed very directly to the improved performance, particularly with regard to data-driven approaches and better ways, more efficient ways, you correctly indicated in your beginning of improving outcomes. So these are my concluding remarks. I would want to say that education is a huge challenge. We're moving away from mediocrity. We have not achieved excellence, but surely and certainly we are improving year by year. This is a recent preliminary result of SACMAC, which involves 20 countries from Southern Africa and East Africa, and has indicated that South Africa has done very, very well, and for the first time now in history across all provinces and in the country, we've exceeded the mean both in terms of literacy and numeracy across the grade. That is good news in terms of the investment that we've made in literacy and numeracy. And again, I'm saying that it's not at the level that we would ideally want to be, but certainly we move a long way from where we were in terms of our performance in literacy and numeracy. And I thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. The Director General has indicated that he would prefer to be a respondent at the end of the day. He's the accounting officer for the more difficult questions. And he would ask the CFO to make the first 2 presentations, followed by Ms. Sabani, and followed thereafter by Mr. Mabuko. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Well, thank you for the elaborate overview. Indeed, it has given us insight on what's happening in the department. And then moving forward, guided by the committee members, today, you see in our letter, we're specific on who we wanted here. Because we want the accounting officer to take full responsibility. Full responsibility. That's what he at the A said. So today we will allow you to go to program. In future, we bring those that we want here. Because we must come and tell us why certain things are not happening. I'm sure you will see our direction, where we're going. We want you to take full responsibility. Because what they will be presenting as the accounting officer, you should be knowing, which is a fact. Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Effie.
Now, when you're referring to the letter. The letter, and previously we've made a decision in this committee that this presentation must not exceed 12 slides. We've got 64 slides here. How are we going to deal with that?
Okay. All right. because I think you're familiar with the content of your report, we will request that you, don't read word, for word, but just give us the, structural presentation, focusing on the key, because you also want the critical areas that, we need for our engagement. Agreed. So are you happy, Dr. Fink? Any other questions before the accounting officer talks to us? None. Okay, Honourable Member, shortest toilet.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say this because the Deputy Minister will be leaving us.
Okay.
Our chairperson put it very clearly that we need to convince the citizens of South Africa that we are taking their plight, their money seriously. So I've been impressed by the fact that you say Mr. Mwedi has got education at heart. Because for a long time, we thought this department was not very serious. Because you have got a history in Limpopo. I come from Limpopo. And you see, people are still talking about things. And we would like to make sure that when we invite ministers, ministers must come. Because when everything else is wrong, people talk about the president. They don't talk about you guys, and you all go into cupboards and hide. You don't even raise your hand and say, I'm part of it. So we would like to make sure that when we invite ministers, ministers must come and take their responsibility. We don't want to hear it next time that it is the president when it is education. The president is not a minister. Thank you.
Okay. And you see the question that was raised by Honourable Member of Peace. I think my greatest I'm saying the aim here is to make sure that we don't sit here the whole day and focus on key issues so that we can go back and continue with the work. So you see, judging this statement by good intention, we also, so that when you talk to me, so we communicate that we'll try our own effort to keep him here for the whole day. But thank you so much. Honourable Member, shall we now listen to the presentation by the accounting officer, Mr. Mweli? If Mr. Mweli, if these members are happy, when you come back next time, I'll call you Honourable Mr. Mweli.
Thank you very much, Chair. Because the copies of the presentation have been circulated and following your advice, Chairperson, we're not going to go through this presentation slide by slide in the interest of saving time. We, on the fourth quarter report of 2015-2016 financial year, the presentation is divided into four parts. The first part deals with the expenditure of the same year. Chairperson, the general performance of the department puts us at 9.7%. We've underperformed under program planning information and assessment, and of course because of what the Deputy Minister has already referred to in respect of spending on infrastructure with specific reference to ACD, and the reasons are provided there. We've also slightly underperformed under program 2, which is curriculum. And the reasons are also provided. The Deputy Minister quite explicitly provided information in respect of extended public works program when couldn't finish capturing the data on time because the system sits in public works and the work is done in education, and the explanation is also provided in that regard. I'm just moving over quickly to slide number 4, which is about the allocation against actual expenditure, providing expenditure per economic classification. we've done well except for in infrastructure. That's the 10%. It's reflected as 79.2% of the expenditure of infrastructure. And again, it relates to Afidi. But we also overperformed in other areas of the department, like the departmental operations. We went over there by about 9%. We also overperformed in terms of projects in the department. But overall, we're still within the allocated funds in the department. We're providing reasons in there for the over and under expenditure. Let me just spend a minute in terms of over expenditure. Over expenditure, particularly in respect of either allocations that we share with provinces, are on account of the fact that provinces will be recording rollovers which do not necessarily reflect in our allocations. And that's why you see over expenditure in some of these areas. Chair, I'm then going to move to performance information, if you allow me. In terms of performance information, we use this color code, if you like, or the dashboard in terms of colors which is used by Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, which means that the red stands for not achieved, and then amber or yellow, because I'm colorblind like most men, partially achieved, and then green means fully achieved. Slide number 12. I'm now slide 12. Yeah, I'm giving slide numbers because you might be having documents that might have more slides. Mine has got two in each page, so that's why maybe a slide number is more useful than pages. In terms of program one, Chair, we have achieved a green all the way. The same applies to slide 15 of program two, we've also achieved. In terms of part two of program two, a number of learners who completed the Karikude program, we've not achieved because at the time when we had to finalize the report, the process that the Deputy Minister referred to, which involves SAQA, of the verification of whether learners had met the requirements or not, was not completed as yet. And therefore, we had to honestly reflect that, given that we have not achieved the target that we had set. And then the next one, which is AMBER, again on the same program, which is slide number 16, we have not met our target in terms of the National Senior Certificate. I'm sure it's common knowledge by now that our overall percentage has dropped, and we're indicating there that we dropped from 75% to 70%. And then we then move to program three. Program three, we've achieved all the targets, Chair. And then that's the first part of program three, which is slide 17. Slide 18, we've not achieved in terms of principals who had to go through competency assessment. And the difficulties around this are also reflected in there, where we need to finalize it at the level of the Education Labor Relations Council. So that process has not been finalized, and because of that, we could not enforce that all principals must go through competency assessment. There are two provinces that started to implement it, but not for all principals. It's now Gauteng and Western Cape. And the next one which has not been achieved, is the number of teachers who have gone through that diagnostic assessment for English as first additional. And that is still on on slide number 18, that we have not achieved as well. And we've sought for strengthening this process by making sure that we get the service provider to independently follow this up and assess our performance in this regard. Flight 19, Chair, we've achieved the first part. We've not achieved fully in terms of the external moderators where to look at the utilization of school profiles by schools themselves to improve their performance. So we've hardly achieved that. And it then takes me to, because the next slide, the other one, was also not achieved, and it takes me to slide number 21. Slide number 21 has also been fully achieved. The same applies to 22. And then slide number 23 has also been fully achieved. We then giving reasons there for underperformance and the remedial action that we are taking. In respect of Karigude, as the Deputy Minister said, we have set ourselves a target of 4.7 million learners that we should achieve at the end of the program. I can say that we've gone over 4.2 million and we are left only with 1 year to cover that. And then in terms of the percentage of learners who passed, to put it in that way, here you will recall that we introduced tests for technical, for tests for all schools in 2014 and 2015. And our assessment is that it brought in increase in the standards as well as increase in the cognitive demands of the question paper. And that accounts for the drop in the performance of the system. The research indicates that if you introduce changes to the system, it's bound to create a dip in the performance of learners because teachers work better with what they know best. So the last part is around, in fact, the last part one, which is part C. We're also providing the same information in terms of the extended public works program, and of course indicating the implications of having not been able to use all the money that was made available through that allocation and the remedial measures that we are taking. And one of the measures that we are taking is to assign this responsibility to the level of at least the deputy director, but also get intent to assist with capturing of data so that we don't suffer the same fate in the financial year. Service, we then providing in part D, we are providing the progress in respect of infrastructure spending, and we're delineating that the provinces like the Eastern Cape in terms of the education infrastructure grant. They have exceeded provinces like KwaZulu-Natal and KZN also exceeded. And provinces such as the Western Cape also exceeded their allocation. And then also providing a summary of progress in terms of schools that have been delivered, which is what the Deputy Minister referred to. And the numbers are indicated here, which begins with 2009 and 10 up to 2015 and 16. We're also providing progress in terms of the allocation for maintenance up to March 2016, and then the next one, of course, is again up to June in terms of the education infrastructure grant. And then we providing further information also in terms of infrastructure in respect of the MTF that we are in at the moment. There's also a summary of the new and replacement of schools which are completed in 2016-2017 financial year, the financial year that we are in. We provided details there as well, the chair, sorry. And then also providing an update in terms of maintenance up to the end of June. And the rest, chair, is about just indicating our needs in respect of human resource capacitation and the conclusion of that report.
Honourable members, we have just received a report on the fourth quarter for the accounting period 15/16. I'd like the honourable members to reflect and engage. Over to you, honourable members.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thanks to the accounting office for the presentation and the Deputy Minister for clarifying some of the reasons for the data to spend. I think the Chair, you said it mouthful when you were saying that the main responsibility of this committee is to follow the expenditure performance and the value for money. So because it's important. Basic Education Department is in top 20 departments. It raises number 10 in budget allocation, as the accounting officer has indicated, like 22 billion that is being allocated. And also the infrastructure, which is also ranked as number 4 in the top 20 departments, you know, the allocation that goes to this particular department. We appreciate that they have improved the performance on the CAPEX. They have really improved. However, Chair, although the Minister has explained the challenge around the issue of the implementation of the school infrastructure as a top grant on the RCT, that the reason of that is the rationalization that needs to be completed carefully so that you prevent the challenges next time. However, Chair, one is not understanding very well, because when you're getting a presentation from the Treasury, they said the challenge that make not to really perform well under RCT is the difficulty in replacing underperformers. That's the report that we got. And on the other hand, the department is saying it's the challenge is rationalization. So it's a problem, you know, because now it doesn't tire up what is the real problem. I think they really need to explain to us what is the real problem. Because the reason for poor performance and the reason for failing to replace underperformance. Because to me, if you underperform, it means that you are in breach of the contract that you are in. I don't see what is the reason for the problem of replacing them. What does the contract say about the underperformance? Because to me, this is really a breach of contract. What is the plan or intervention of the department to remedy the situation for the better expenditure performance in the social infrastructure especially? I am saying this because if we fail to spend on the infrastructure, there is a challenge on the ground around the issue of service delivery. That is one. Secondly, if you fail to spend on the infrastructure, it's what this government has targeted to say that job creation will come from infrastructure. So the country is facing three challenges. One of the challenges is unemployment. If we fail to spend on the infrastructure and we fail to replace the non-performance, and we are saying it's a difficulty, I would have understood what the Deputy Minister was saying, to say the issue of rationalization is a challenge. You know, you can't just rush it. But at the same time, when you plan, you know the processes that you're going to follow sometime around the issue of rationalization, that it may take long. So just to budget for something that you know that there are processes, I don't think it is correct, because it should have been spent in the other project and make a difference. The other thing, can one get the clarity or not? I think maybe we will be getting the clarity on around the reasoning of the delays in the distribution of school waste. And it is supposed to be done, because, oh no, this one is for the first one, is because I read both the fourth and the first quarter. Also, around the issue of the performance, key performance area of each and every department, strategic management, governance and accountability, supply chain management, you know, in all those particular areas, you can see that the department has performed partially, which is to say that sometimes there is a policy but not implemented and so on and so forth. This lack of compliance might impact negatively in the management of resources allocated to advance the delivery plan. Maybe we can be explained to say what is the challenges that make the department not on those key performance areas not achieving very well, because it may have a negative impact on the service delivery, and also it may lead to ineffectiveness of the internal audit unit, because the issue of the training is not really being complied with, you know. And lastly, Honorable Chair, we have been following on the department performance since 2011-2012, till 2014-2015, if one may just highlight on those particular matters. The Department of Basic Education is one of the repeat offenders regarding irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Just to highlight, Honorable Chair and Honorable Deputy Minister, 2011-2012 irregular expenditure of 74.82 million. The following year increased 82.8 million. Another financial year, 830.8 million. 2014-15, 727.7 million. You know, it's just increasing this regular expenditure, as well as the wasteful expenditure, or the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, although it's better on this particular part, although it was acceptable. There is I know that in 2011-12, there was a 12 million, which is not as bad as a regular expenditure. But in 2013-14, there was eradication of that wasteful expenditure. But irregular expenditure persists. And what I'm trying to check, Honorable Chair, Section 38.1c, Roman Figure 2, accounting officer must present unauthorized, irregular and fruitless expenditure and losses resulting from criminal conduct. Must present. It's a matter of must. It's not an option. But here, as I'm saying this, they are one of the peak offenders in all these years going forward with these irregular expenditures, if nothing has happened. You know, there is no change. And also, 38.2 of the Public Finance Management Act is saying anyone who commits an act which undermines the financial management should be taken into task. Is the Department of Basic Education lacking consequence management for those who fail us? Because if in all these years it continues, it means to say that there are no consequences for wrongdoing. What is the plan of the department to prevent this continuous irregular expenditure that are taking place? Thank you.
Well, I was just about to stop you. So you read my mind. Honorable members, indeed, you were spot on in terms of the issues that you raised, but we must then agree on, you know, for progress. Maybe a member raising three questions and then we give you another round, so that we can allow all members to participate. And then we, especially once the Deputy Minister is here, we must allow, we must hear all members, the issues, must listen to all the issues raised by members. Alright, Honourable Member Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Deputy, the Minister, to be in our midst, the officer from the Department of Basic Education. I have two to three questions I want to know. The first one is with regards to ACD. The poor performance of ACD has been a challenge since its introduction in 2011. And to us, it is a great concern. I know my colleague, Mena Dope, raised this issue, that you are only pointing to the rationalization of schools as the main problem. But the report that we received from Trader, it just indicates that really there are people who are not doing their work correctly. The poor performance of this ACD is due to the underperformance, but we are not raising it as a department. I would like to know whether have you ever met with the Department of Treasury and to get this information that was given to us. And what I would like to know is how much has this impacted on the actual cost versus the planned cost, because delay in any project results in the cost escalation. Are there any implementing agents that are responsible for the delay or poor performance? And is there any punishment from the department that is taking place against those implementing agents if they have their left? Let it come to the 36 million from the SPWP, Karagude Incentive Grant. This is a good project and creating lots of jobs as a flagship program. We're very concerned about this program and the understanding of it. What I want to know, what are the challenges? What seems to be challenged with how the calculation is done? How many volunteers were affected as a result of this issue? Has the problem resolved? It will only be concerning if volunteers are not paid on time despite government has allocated money to this problem. Chairperson, thank you very much. I will come to the second round.
Thank you for your intervention, Honourable Member. The next speaker on our list is Honourable Dr. Pete, who will be followed by Honourable Member Shoppestone and Honourable Member Mukanyane, and then Honourable Member Lo. In that order, okay? Then Honourable Member Mr. Mark Lockin. Mark Lockin, yes. Okay.
Yes, my limited three questions will be followed. The first one is actually Honourable Deputy Minister mentioned
fact that there have been a number of schools that have had to be closed in a lot of provinces, or but mostly in the Eastern Cape, and I think the figure was somewhere around 138. My question is, all these schools, and the repeating Honourable Deputy Minister also mentioned the fact that there are much schools that obviously would not have to be replaced. But my question is are any of those schools that have to be closed and merged with other schools, are any schools that could still be used? And the reason I'm asking this question, because it might not necessarily be used for schools, obviously, but there might be, for example, your team colleges that might necessarily need accommodation. So is any provision being made for that, and is that being looked into? On slide number 21, Honourable Chair, I see a concerning statement there with regard to the percentage of learners who obtain a national certificate, and it appears as though there's been a decline. And the reason given for underperformance here, there was an increase in high order questions across all subjects to drive quality. Surely that's what we want. So why is that a concern? Is my question. And then on slide number 24, Honourable Chairperson, again, this is slide number 21. The percentage of schools provided with sanitation facilities and percentage of public schools that use school administration management. Now, again, why is the target only 99% instead of 100% for the sanitation? So surely, what happens to the rest? Do they use other means of sanitation? And then obviously the schools that use school administration and management systems to provide data to the national learner tracking system at 60%. Again, should that not, our target not be a little higher than that? Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I will now ask Honourable Member Shopesi Tole.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just ask one question because I would like to donate my time to
the response.
No. To Honourable Matoka, because she was asking very nice questions. I like them. So I just want to know if the DG has signed a contract with the minister. That's all. And the rest, give it to the DG.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I will just ask a very general question in terms of, I'll make an example perhaps with some of it. In terms of overspending, for instance, overspending which is related to the testing and moderation of grade 12 examination. It is a little bit, you know, that response is a bit problematic because exams have always been set and the moderation done for it to be a challenge, and then the answer being reviewing the allocation of funding. I think maybe it poses another question of why in the first place it happened, but there is a bit of a question on that, and also due to payments of the integrated exam system that was higher than projected. One would still ask why was it why was the project not done properly? So I'm just making examples. There are quite a few of those things, and I think maybe it would help if they really know the actual thing. The other thing is not a problem because it's common knowledge. We are all familiar with it. And there was also an issue of the exchange rate for funding of foreign or international organizations, where it said that in future they will estimate. It would be nice to know that it is being done now. But maybe the other question that I would want to know, there's something about the expenditure, over expenditure to roll over. My understanding of roll over is that the money is rolled over because the department has requested for a roll over because it is already committed to something. So maybe if we can get just an explanation to that. And then, and then, is the issue of public works
various departments, our health service agencies, and we always have a problem with the issue of the role of public works in the department in terms of infrastructure. Public works would always blame the department that they bring them lanes and so on and so on. So it's just by way of commenting that this is one area that continues to be a problem because public works, if they were here, they would say the department doesn't submit information on time. And thank you.
You are so right on this one because why they blame the department for submitting information late. If you listen to the presentation, the department also blamed public works for submitting information late. So you have to clarify us so that we find the solution. We can't play, you know, enough on blame shift game. That's not a solution. We really want a solution, talking to these academics and very important people in education. Quality solutions for that matter. Alright, shall we then have Honorable Low?
Thanks, Chair. I'm quite covered by my colleagues and the questions that they have raised. One, I just want to ask, is there any consequence management for this implement agency, this poor performer? And what steps have you done to ensure that whichever one that you're going to employ now, they don't fall into that poor performing state of the previous one? Because it's really a concern, Minister, that you find that within the presentations that you're getting from National Treasury, you hear another picture, and then on your presentation, you hear another picture. So I would just like to find out from your side and your commitment from your department in terms of that. And then I want to also on page 7, my colleague has also, I think page 7 or slide 7, has alluded to the over expenditure on the transfers and subsidies. And this has come up on numerous departments, Chair, even National Treasury have one like this, where they have overspent when it comes to exchange rates and things like that. And that not being considered when we are transferring monies or going into projects. I know you did give mitigation measures in your presentation. But I would just like to find out which programs or which organizations is this that this funding or transfer that went to. If you don't have now, you can send it for us via the researcher. And then I have made notes, so I must now, some of the things are covered. I don't want to repeat whatever my colleagues have said. Yeah, I think that was covered. I have a whole sum of notes here, but it's already covered. There is no point. We speak the same language.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My first question relates to comments on slide 9 and 10. On slide 9, there's a line there from the top, EPWP, very good, only 45.25% has actually been spent. And then on slide 10, we get an explanation that this underspending is mainly on EPW grant. Underspending on the grant was also due to delays in finalizing the calculation and late submission of data and EPWP electronic system. The major problem was the delay in submitting the certified ID copies to EPWP. So this sounds very scary to me, because it sounds to me like we've got a whole lot of people who did work and would pay for it, because they'll only be submitting these things after they've actually done their job. Now, we've got a whole lot of people out there who've done work and haven't been paid. And for that, now we have a 45% only spend spend of what was allocated for the spend. And I think that that's an indictment on us, on the department. Really, we can't allow this kind of thing to happen. You know, people work for money. They're desperate. They work people. That's why they're out there doing the job. And if they're not going to get paid after they've actually worked and have to wait months and months to get paid, that's terrible. And I think we really need to look seriously at that. My next comment is on slide 16. This says, performance indicators, number of learners completing the curriculum program, annual 430,441. This is actual output, 329,641 learners were registered in 2015, a minus 100% deviation. Then there's an explanation due to the stop teaching in September, etc. I understand that, but what I want to know is, we have the performance indicator is how many people complete. 430,000, but only 329,000 have been registered. So we're never going to get 430 completing it if we've only got 239 registering. I would like to hear an explanation as to what's going on here, because if starting in September and a whole lot more being registered before then, it doesn't say which year in September. Was it September 2015 or was it only coming up in September 2016? I just have a concern that we're never going to achieve this target on the numbers that we have here. And do we need to really look at this, maybe readjust the target to make more accurate or get a more realistic figure there? And then on slide 32, sorry, I just selected some of the notes I've made because the questions haven't been asked. On slide 32 is maintenance. Maintenance is one of my pet issues because having been in local government where it seems that maintenance is almost a swear word, it just never seems to happen. I'm concerned here that we have 8,540 schools requiring maintenance, but the number of maintenance projects for the 15-16 year was only 3,392. So we do, what's that, 5,000 schools that needed maintenance, it wasn't even an issue. We didn't even have projects to maintain. So this can't be right, because it just means we're going to compound the effect. You know, for the next year, we're starting off with 5,000 that need maintenance, plus this, what does it then do for the next? Yeah, and then we have an underspend. We only spend 85%. We still didn't spend 15% of our budget. I have a concern here, because maintenance is very important. If you don't maintain things, they fall apart, they ruin, you've got to rebuild from scratch again. And I really think we need to up our game when it comes to maintenance. At local government level, we've always told you have to provide at least 8% of your budget for maintenance. It seldom happens, but I think the department needs to look at a fixed figure for maintenance of infrastructure to keep up, because otherwise we're going to be building schools forever. We need to try and reach a point where we have enough schools for our need. I know obviously with a growing population we will reach a stage where it slows right down, because we will hopefully have covered most of the backup by then, but I really think we need to look at looking after what we've got. Thank you, ma'am.
PFMA is clear. You pay service provider 50 days. This is law. You can't bend the law. You can't. So you see that we not very happy. But here you are obliged to comply. So you will tell us what you are doing to make sure that service providers are paid within 50 days. Now what we are saying is prescribed. So which means there's no compromise. They don't expect us to understand. And they don't want love stories. They want to know why are you not compliant, because it is the law and all of us are expected to respect the law. Right on the okay, where the maintenance, the same thing, I'm just adding. On the maintenance of school buildings. I know why National Treasury insisted on departments to have maintenance budget. The wisdom that came from National Treasury was to ensure that we reduce the long-term cost of refurbishing infrastructure and ensure a higher level of functionality.
So from your presentation, only 85% of maintenance budget was spent. What are we saying? There is money, but you're not using it. And yet you've got a maintenance plan. It's something else not to have money. But when you have the money, the accounting office, we expect you to use it. Because you have it. And not to return it back to National Treasury. Alright. So that's fine. Honourable Member Kobaza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just raise a few questions. Slide 6 and 9. If you could explain these other transfers which have caused you to overspend by 105.86%, and that goes for departmental operations, what are those? Operations and the project, just those three, so that we get an understanding of what exactly, what were specific, are the specifics related to that. On slide 26, under reason for underperformance, you are saying that the lack of an appropriate classroom as well as the required funding prevented da-da-da-da. My question there is, that sounds like you were expecting funding from somewhere else. It was not part of your pledged budget. Can you explain that? And slide 30, I think it has been spoken to, but I just would like to understand, for instance, the overspending in the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, just a little northwest, and Western Cape. That the first percentage is followed by the other one. Does it mean that those provinces have delivered more than was expected, or are these over expenditure a result of other things, unexpected costs? So that if it is unexpected expected costs that give rise to overspending, then we deal with that challenge. Slide 31, I see that the provinces whose delivery of school targets is low relative to the others, the Free State, Northern Cape, and Northwest. I just would like to understand whether they don't have the problem of too many schools that they have to deal, or is it simply a result of incapacity and thus therefore low performance, which would also suggest that there is not good spending of money on infrastructure in those provinces. I don't seem to understand on page 32 the percentage maintenance budget to total compared to the percentage expenditure on maintenance relative to maintenance budget, because in some instances it shows very huge, what looks like very huge overspending, like Gauteng and Northern Cape. Yet the other percentage are relatively very, very slow. If you could explain that to us so that it becomes clear. But also tell us whether that 160% in housing and 200% in the Northern Cape suggests that they have overperformed themselves and that would justify that. So what is this huge percentage of which looks like overspend? Because if they overperform themselves, then it isn't
the budgetary question as well. And last, page 23, very low spending in the June, low expenditure at June 2016, the first quarter, in most of these provinces, with the exception of Northern Cape and Western Cape looks a bit better. But that's not worth 38%. What is that core expenditure? And lastly, Chairperson, you know, it would be interesting to ask it from the department itself. Who are these implementing agents who are letting you down, especially on the city project? So that we might find time to speak to the senior president as well at some point. Thank you.
So, Chair, can I quickly just pop one in?
Sure. I will allow you, but I do want us to take a look at the paper. There's another presentation coming.
Just a question. No, it's very short, Chair, on slide 10, or on page 10, on the high spending of the needle, the mitigation measure says, the department will develop the HR budget plan to ensure that the spend of the compensation of employees on the needle is manageable. By when? It doesn't say, it still says the department will do it. By when will it be done? So if we can have the minister's input on that one. Thank you.
Need to see the target so that we are able to assess whether there is progress on the, now we're looking at the bigger picture, national development plan, and what interventions are required from us so as to help you in terms of our recommendations to the House. Of course, this one is just a comment on the over-expenditure. In terms of the PMA, we all know over-expenditure is an offense. It's not something that is like sentence. And non-compliance with the treasury norms, because we are given treasury norms per order. But also the accounting officer. Why do you allow this business from the TSA when the TSA says we have to ensure that there is compliance and a balance between performance and compliance? Why? Because if they don't deliver there, we look up to you to explain why it happened, because it has happened under your books. But also you have your IYM, EA monitoring, a tool, you know, on a monthly basis for you to control these expenditures. Because remember, we're talking fourth quarter, and you have a monthly IYM to help you control. Thank you very much. You have been, I didn't say it's going to be robust, I didn't hide, not transparent, but now we will hand over to the department to respond. We will give you, I'm looking at the time constraints, but we still want to hear the story. We'll give you 25 minutes to respond. As long as in your response, you tell us a long story. Going around about it before you get to the actual point. Just go straight to the point. Be short and to the point. I appreciate it. Honorable Deputy Minister,
Sachina. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the esteemed colleague for raising very, very important and pertinent issues. I think all of them are relevant and certainly legitimate in the context of the challenges that we face. Chairperson, some of the questions would require
a more general approach. So when we talk about contracts, for example, who are the implementing agents? The implementing agents are, among others, Department of Public Works, the IDG, which forms part of Public Works, it's the Developer Bank of South Africa, Gula Trust, at times it's private contractors. So there's a range of contractors that are available. In the main, for example, the Development Bank of South Africa was on the recommendation of Treasury. But in the initial stages, just 3 years back, their performance was way below par. We do engage with them. The former Minister of Finance, Deputy Minister of Basic Education, Deputy Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development sat with them and told them, for example, we discovered that they would have one contract for a school. Now, if you had to terminate, correctly point out contract and terminate the contract, that means that you might find that corporate schools are progressing well, but the other four are not progressing well. But because they are all interlinked, you have a difficulty with termination. We change that completely so each school has a separate contract so that we are able to do that. We believe, as you correctly pointed out, it's about government delivery. It's not about basic education, public works. It's how you do that together. And for that reason, the Department of Public Works and the Department of Basic Education, through their deputy ministers, have met with the implementing agents to say, how do we together work these things? And some very interesting things that we could share with you, for example. In the Eastern Cape, you have the CSIR, reputedly good in many areas, but very poor in the delivery of water and sanitation programs. They could determine their contract and hand it over to Gula Trust. And Gula Trust has been delivering almost 100% in terms of the target. We're extremely satisfied. They're also now in Mpumalanga, improving on the delivery there. The IDT, for example, has contract in the Eastern Cape. Now, the IDT does well in certain areas, certain provinces, does very poorly in other provinces. And we said, let's have this conversation out here. Let's agree that in the Eastern Cape, you are not performing, return their contract. So the contracts have been terminated in the Eastern Cape, and this is it. What the Department of Public Works, through the Deputy Minister and the Minister, has indicated, that they want to strengthen the capacity of IDT within the Department of Public Works to do the delivery of infrastructure, so that it's not all over the place and it's focused. And what is now happening is that the Department, Basic Education, Public Works, and the implementing agents are meeting regularly to map out. So Mr. Makoko will tell you that really water, sanitation, electricity, these departments are getting together. Because what they do is almost every 2 months they report to the deputy ministers in relation to the progress that has been made. So contract years can be terminated. But you have situations, take a Western Cape for example. You know, public works has been a problem in the past, so they've improved significantly. But then we had a situation where two of the jobs couldn't be delivered. And the reason for it is the contract, the community didn't allow contractors to continue to do the work because they said, no, they are not from the community, and therefore the minister himself had to intervene in order for the progress to take place. There are two schools that have almost been completed, that have not been delivered in the Western Cape, and the reason for it, poor engineering design, and that has to be corrected because they have to comply with safety standards. So you cannot predict everything. But what we are saying now is we've developed great capacity. So the issue, for example, in relation to the issues of maintenance, for example, is overspent. And part of the reason is for the first time we have a dedicated engineer, dedicated quantity surveyor, who is able to drive the process of infrastructure development. And that human resource capacity has indeed contributed very positively to what is going to happen. What the Department of Basic Education does, because there are three grants, and I think it's important to understand, the CBD specifically with unsafe schools and unsafe schools. So, for example, the phenomenon in the Western Cape would be the Blanky schools. The phenomenon in the Free State and the Northwest would be Adventist schools and parts of Gauteng. The phenomenon in the Eastern Cape would be much schools. So when I gave the example of the Eastern Cape and rationalization, it was not a generic example. I said, specifically in relation to the Eastern Cape, this is a challenge. And therefore, certainly the issues that you correctly raised, you must be quick on finalizing your contract. And a very interesting phenomenon. Projects are completed. Now, when a contract is concluded, you have the last 90 days where funds are retained. And until you obtain a final certificate, you can't have closure. In other words, the department cannot say that the amount is closed. What used to happen is that the retention amount in contract was as low as 5%, between 2.5% and 5%. to the professional people, for them, if you look at the amount that they've received already, don't bother about issuing the final certificate because it's not worth the trouble. We have instructed all implementing agents to amend their contracts to ensure that professionals will not, they will retain 20% minimum of certain negative closure. Now these are, you know, extraordinary steps that we are taking in order to deal with real issues, and certainly we're looking at that very, very closely. What we have also done is we're basically working very closely with the provincial departments. So if you look at your slide that you referred to, Chairperson, slide number 31, slide number 31 speaks to provincial schools. Now, we cannot determine for provinces because they get the allocation in terms of their conditional grant. So they determine their priority list. But what we do is make sure that our city program does not clash with their programs in the provinces. And we provide additional support to them even in the infrastructure, even though it's an education infrastructure grant. An additional element to that is basically the division of revenue also provides for allocation of resources. Some provinces provide for it, others do not provide for it. Now, with regard to the numbers, and I'm actually going to, I'm not dealing specifically with each issue, but I'll try to deal with all issues. Why is it that you would find schools, say Gauteng is 104 schools, and you would find the Northern Cape 16 schools? That's quite obvious. Gauteng basically receives more than 3,000, at least more than 3,000 people, learners every year. So the demand for infrastructure in Gauteng, followed by Western Cape, followed by KwaZulu-Natal, is far higher than in the Northern Cape. People are leaving the Northern Cape and are arriving in Gauteng and in the Western Cape. So that phenomenon contributes very directly to the number of schools. It doesn't mean that they are more efficient. It simply means that the demand has been increased. And what we've also said, for the first time in the past 5 years, we've been able to pay particular attention to primary schools because that's where the foundations of learning take place. So a lot of the CD programs deal with primary schools, which is very, very good, because every primary school has a laboratory, has a library, has dedicated to art clubs, sporting amenities, has water sanitation, has IT connectivity. So when you deliver your CD school, it's fully finished. It's absolutely satisfying. But the reality is that because of the migration, you find that your rural schools are becoming smaller in number, the demographics have changed, and your urban schools are becoming larger, intra-provincial and across the province. That means that your plan has to take into account the reality of migration from rural to urban within the province and from one province to the other province. And it basically is a huge phenomenon that you have to deal with. Now, with regard to Kalikule, we have more than 32,000 volunteers in Kalikule and create employment opportunities for thousands of these practitioners who basically for a stipend provide the service. But the good news is that many of them pursue a teaching career, become practitioners in grade R, and with regard to their payment from the Department of Basic Education, there has been less of a problem. It is with regard to the requirements of the Department of Public Works, who have an external requirement or external process which we have to comply with before they release the funds, because in spent public works, resources are not located within the Department of Basic Education, but it's located within the Department of Public Works. Like in infrastructure, what we've done now is we work closely to say, let's deal with the matter in a way that they can improve efficiency, because we cannot have a volunteer first stipend doing the work and not getting paid on time. And Chairperson, we certainly agree with your concern in that regard. So I do believe that the challenges with regard to volunteers have been resolved. We are, in fact, on the cusp of completing. We are in the mop-up phase. We've done more than 4.2 million literacy numeracy amongst adults, and this is basically the last mile, as it were, for the eradication of illiteracy and numeracy. Now, that would be with regard to some of the issues. Now, the issues about schools that are closed, Dr. C, thanks for raising that. You know, we've introduced the vocational element this year, and next year will be the vocational and the occupational. And these require different spaces. And we are saying that when schools basically are oriented towards technical schools, then we should utilize the second schools, because otherwise you're going to be spending a lot of money on infrastructure and you don't have the money or the infrastructure to be able to drive that process quickly enough. We have more than 1,000 schools that are providing technical education, and indeed it's really speaking to a marked improvement, so we agree with you. Now, you raised the important point of the figure about why has there been a reduction. You know, they have to put a lot of information in a small table like this. What are the realities? The realities with regard to the National Senior Certificate Examination are the following. Firstly, it was the highest number of learners that set for matric examination, more than 700,000. Secondly, we had, amongst those that set for the examination, more than 65,000 that were progress learners. In other words, learners who would not have been sitting for the matric examination, but were given an opportunity because they had failed in that phase, the SAT band once. Now, quite remarkably, from 65,000, when given the opportunity, more than 12,500 got a bachelor's pass. And you had provinces such as the Northwest and Free State that produced more than 60% passes, even though these were progressive. We've learned a lot from the exercise. We're improving on that there. Now, with regard to cognitive demand, it's one of the elements, indeed, we are saying that we have to raise the bar year after year. And in order to do that, not to punish punitive measures, but to ensure that when the learners get to university, they are able to cope adequately with issues. Now, the phenomenon with regard to the approach is no longer one of regurgitating what has been taught, but it really develops the innovative problem-solving skills of learners. And that is a cognitive demand that basically is we've embedded into the papers. So it is a little more challenging, it requires more exposure, it requires better facilitation. But I do believe that it will only benefit the learners. And the last factor with regard to that is that previously there would be compensation for language. And then we are arguing, my personal view, and this is objective, is that you can't take away that compensation because a child grows up in the body, for example, the street, who doesn't have any exposure to English as a language, the social language that is spoken, the institutional language it is taught. Now suddenly it's in matric, hasn't had the opportunity of interacting in first edition language, has to write a paper in English, and does not get compensated. The child may be just cognitively as gifted as a child in an urban setting, but because of that difficulty in terms of communication, is not able to perform well. But what they've been doing, they've been malleating, deducting, reducing the level of compensation year after year. So all this works out in a way that contributes toward our better understanding of the reduction. But lastly, if you take into account the supplement examination results, we are almost 74%, so the percentage point is like something like 2%. I think I'm too alarmed about it. We must continue with the improvement of cognitive demand. We must be better organized and improve facilitation for learning. The tracking system that you reflected on, we've exceeded the target. Why isn't it 100%? You know, if we were web-based and if we had ICT in any of our schools live, we would have been 100%. Not within a year, not within 6 months, within a month. And we are converting our platform, our SAMCM platform, to a web-based system where we could then track the curriculum coverage, we can track the learner performance, we can track the attendance of learned schools in real time. And indeed, I think that's a remarkable thing. But we've got to do so progressively because it is in Gauteng, it is in the Western Cape. But go to KwaZulu-Natal, go to Limpopo, go to Eastern Cape, you find that the geography does not contribute to an easy solution as such. So I hope that helps. With regard to grade 12, I think Mr. Mokonyani helped with that matter. The rollover basically occurs under the following circumstances. When Treasury, for example, when you tell Treasury, look, these are the projects, priorities, we weren't able to pay because we don't receive the final certificate. They're not going to take the money away from you because, you know, within a month, within 2 months, you would have to pay that because there is visible, there is evidence of the actual work that is being done. So rollovers occur in consultation. You can't roll over without the authority of Treasury. It has to occur with the authority of Treasury. Now, the issue about public works and the partnership is so critical and necessary. Public works have to partner with us, and if we work separately, silos, we're not going to be delivering, and public workers themselves consider that they have challenges, and therefore they are strengthening their hand of IDT and driving it in a particular direction. Thank you for raising the issues that you raised. There must be consequences where there's on. That's why we've taken away contracts from CSIR, with the permission, obviously, from IDT, where they're not performing in areas. the contractors are not performing, we're terminating the contract immediately. And I want to say, you know, to deliver a pool per week on average for 30 months consistently is not a bad achievement. Not considering the challenge. That's not a bad achievement. I need to add that. And these schools are very different from the little schools that are built. These are state-of-the-art schools. So if you go to the Western Cape, no school that has been built for less than 25 minutes. And if you look at every one of the schools, you say, well, I'm quite happy to send my child to this school because it has all the facilities and amenities. And to do that consistently in this financial year, we're going to, at a minimum, be delivering 50 schools. That's going to be a CD program alone. I'm not even talking about provincial infrastructure delivery. And I think what you're telling us is what we must do. We must be vigilant. We must monitor consistently, monthly, as you say, Chairperson, and ensure that we determine contracts, as you correctly point out, where there's a strong performance, and that way we would be able to move forward. So the consequences, though, are indeed there. The issue of maintenance is very interesting. It's not the generosity of failing. It's because it's demanded. We said you can't, and we agree with you, McLeod. You can't basically spend so much on infrastructure, and there's allocation for maintenance. And we'd be grateful, fairly understood. Therefore, they agreed in cabinet to allocate 20% of the infrastructure grant to maintenance. And what we're doing is, even though it's a responsibility of provinces, the minister has to maintain norms and standards. So, for example, on Thursday, we will be receiving a report with the Council of Education Ministers meeting to say how far have they gone with regard to the compliance of the norms and the standards, because this has been promulgated. And to what extent have they utilized the maintenance allocation in order to comply with it? So the issue about housing, for example, why was it so high? You would remember, even in the media, there was an issue about toilets. That had to be dealt with very, very swiftly. And part of it was upgrading the toilets. So it's something, it goes to the heart of the dignity of the learner. And if you don't, you can't say, look, I'm going to wait until my budget becomes available. It's something that you've got to deal with immediately. And hence, the overrun in terms of something. But treasury is not unreasonable. Where there are legitimate reasons for the old expenditure, as long as it's not wasteful, and as long as it's not irregular, they're willing to condone it. And I must say, treasury has been extremely supportive in terms of that there. The slide dealt with the maintenance, Mr. Kowaza, the slides 6 and 9. I'm just going to quickly into the way. For the other transfers, I think let my county officer and my CFO do some work. They will be able to give you that delay there. Slide 50, I just want to go through that quickly as well. Thank you for that. Well, I think that's really the explanation as to why some schools, some provinces spend more and some provinces, it depends on the learner population, the number of schools, depends on migration, a range of factors. So it's not, the over expenditure and under expenditure is not always tied to efficiency. It is sometimes tied to efficiency and other times it's related to other factors that are there. But quite clearly you would find the Gauteng and the Western Cape, for example, would generally do better than other provinces because that's where human resource capacity is. If you want an engineer, a quality surveyor, a civil engineer, electrical engineer, you never have any difficulty in Cape Town, or even have any difficulty in Johannesburg. But try to get it in the city, or try to get it in the deep rural areas of Limpopo. It's extremely difficult, and that contributes to the efficiency and the ability to spend. So the lack of capacity is something that we dealt with, and indeed all provinces have to report on the capacity that they have established because Treasury has allocated dedicated resources for them to improve on their human resource capacity. And Kumasa, the implementing agents, have given an explanation regarding that. With regard to NIDU, I think the Director General will deal with that. And I must say that your issue that you raised quite legitimately about target care. It's important. We have targets for our CD. Why is it that we don't have targets for the provincial schools? And I think what we must do is basically, on the basis of their information, be able to include that target. So let me report to you what is solely our responsibility, but we also provide information as to what the provinces is supposed to be doing. But we will ensure that in future, that even when we provide data from the provinces, we also provide you with the targets that they have submitted to the department. I think that's fair and reasonable. I don't know whether I don't think I've tried at my level best to deal with those issues that have been raised again. I think it just means working harder and harder. But what we do assure you in education is that even the minister, even the executive gets involved in these matters. Because if with the moment you take your eye off the ball, you're going to lose it. And you're not going to be able to improve. And it's a lot of money, it's about the future and investment of our children. And we can give you the assurance that we will do our level best. Chairperson, I'm sure the DG and the CFO would want to add, and I should fully in as far as I can. And again, thank the colleagues for their help, important contribution.
You should start with the CFO and then you then is I think also close whatever gets that will be left. Okay. What do you mean?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will start with the exchange rates and it will answer two or three questions that were asked around other transfers. What happens with this one? The over is benefited because when the exchange rate goes up and you have a budget of a particular amount, you have to go to Treasury to get approval to increase the transfer. Now, we recall that in January, March last year, January to March, there were huge increases to the exchange rate. Now, what we did, we made payments and then went to Treasury afterwards. But they indicated that it is incorrect to do it that way, hence they didn't give us approval. Now, we are saying in our litigating measures that we will increase, we will monitor the exchange rate at the time that we receive the invoice and then go to Treasury to increase the budget so that we are within the budget. But the numbers must recall that if you put too much money in an allocation for a particular transfer, if the exchange rate is low, you can't use that money unless you get Treasury approval, and that might create a problem when we show under expenditure for transfer. And then I also want to add on the rollovers. On the rollovers that were indicated, it's on conditional grants, let me say on land. It's only on conditional grants. What happened there is that we have transferred to the provinces all the money that we had to transfer for conditional grants, but they have requested rollovers in their provinces where they had underspent in the previous financial year. Now, that does not come through our books. So our books will show a conditional grant, for instance, 50 million, for example, but they receive 5 million from the provincial treasurer. Now, that doesn't reflect on our side, but when they send, they will send the 55 million. So when they send us report, they don't split what was sent with our money and what was split with money that was given directly to them. They give us the total amount, hence they're showing over expenditure. But that does not mean the department overspent. It's only expenditure in the province. Hence we are showing that amount.
In terms of internal arrangements, and also to assist you to account correctly, because we give us accurate information, it means you must arrange with the department to split. Because it is accounting to you. So they must split so that you can account on every cent that was transferred to them by you.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you, Honourable Chair. We will engage with provinces on that one. And then the name of organizations that were affected by the overexpenditure of transfer is UNESCO and ADEA. Those are the organizations that were affected. And then the overexpenditure on departmental operations of grants as well as the project. This one has to do with new initiatives that were implemented by the grant unit. For instance, the one that comes to mind is there were subjects where papers were marked centrally, and that was not there before. And normally when marking is done in the provinces, they pay for that. But as we are saying, we would deal with it that we prepare ahead, that whatever changes they want to implement, we provide enough budget for them upfront rather than after the fact. So we have spoken to the relevant units and we are dealing with that. I think I've covered all the ones.
Before the PG comes through, Chairperson, ADEA is the Association for Education in Africa. in ESCO we all know, but ADEA is we are members of ADEA, or in fact most countries in Africa are part of that association that deals with basic education.
Some of us are new, we're still learning
Africa Development Education Association, something like that. But I do know it was actually constituted in South Africa. South Africa was a chair at one stage, but it deals with all education issues, whether it's ICT, whether it's teacher development for the continent out there. And basically, when you go to UNESCO, Africa is able to speak with one voice because they reflect on their context and the dynamic within the continent before they go to the international association. Thank you.
Chairperson, honorable members and deputy minister, thank you very much for the questions and comments. But as you indicated, we are not able to respond to each one of them. The deputy minister covered quite comprehensively some of the questions, and they are going to help us to improve as we go forward. Chair, just to start with some of the questions that you asked. Indeed, non-compliance, we take a zero approach to non-compliance with the PMA. I wish the entire staff of the department would have been part of this meeting. Well, I do accept that if you are new, you take over both assets and liabilities. The chairperson of the audit committee and the colleague who are here will tell you that I've written letters. This is my first financial year that has just completed 2015-2016. I've written letters and I've received responses. I've dealt with some of the responses. I'm in the process of dealing with some. Because I do agree with you 100% that in terms of the PFMA, we must take an approach that says, you know, zero non-compliance, which is the approach that I'm using. The CFO has explained the over-expenditure that it especially comes from outside the vote and it's got implications to the vote, and we take your advice that we are one sector, we need to sort it out so that in terms of reconciliation, it does not reflect what it has reflected here. We also take your advice, Chair, of the time of delivery and targets as they appear on the ADT. In our future reporting, to make sure that we also reflect on that. Chairperson, I also want to just indicate that we monitor compliance with the 30 days honoring of invoices on a monthly basis. On a monthly basis, we do it within the department. Unfortunately, some of the transactions that we are reporting about are outside the department. For instance, some of the expenditure that we are reporting on is part of the equitable share, which is part of the allocation of provinces. But in respect of the department, we do that on a monthly basis and we report to national treasury on those. If you check the performance of all departments, I'm sure our department would be viewed as one of those departments that are indeed complying. But these are issues that we address in forums with HOD from provinces, but also forums with MP in the meeting that the Deputy Minister referred to earlier on. I also thought that, and I just indicate to confirm, especially the question that was raised by Honorable Logan, where he said, does it mean that there were people who were not paid? I can assure the committee that all volunteers have been regularly paid. There is no stage where people were not paid because we have not received the ETWP money from public works. What usually happens is that whilst you are waiting for money that comes from public works, we use our allocation, and as soon as we receive it, then we reconcile our records. So we make sure that nobody is negatively affected because of non-payment. The 400 vis-a-vis the 200, I can assure the committee that if we take the classical definition of the ministerial task team in terms of a number of people who have gone through basic numeracy literacy for others. It exceeded the 4.7 million, which was the target. But what we are talking about here is people have gone through and people who are assessed whether they reflect the requisite competencies of numeracy and literacy. And we are at 4.2 million. At 4.2 million. People have gone through more than 4.7, but people who have gone through and have been assessed and demonstrate the requisite competencies is 4.2 million. Maybe how other committees that you're reporting to have dealt with instances where one department is saying this, the other department is saying something different. They call you and then put you under one roof. And then if you're under one roof, there's no way that you can point fingers. You can only confront the facts and the truth. We've done that with social development and art. We've done that with telecommunication and postal services and art. And my advice would be that maybe CHEM might want to consider the same with national treasury, because what national treasury is saying, it might be a factor, but it's not the main factor with us. The major factor with us is rationalization. The others are contract management and so on, the deputy minister has adequately explained. Even if we even go beyond what is expected, we ensure that there are consequences for implementing agents. I have signed a contract with the minister. In fact, I've been evaluated from August up to end of March. I've now signed a new contract for 2016-2017. And all senior managers have gone through that. I evaluate them. They evaluate those who are reporting to them. And we reflect our performance as it is reported here. Chair, maybe the performance information, in terms of the performance information, indeed where we underperformed, we reflected as such. And I think it is really true. Sometimes we punch far above our weight. We put targets that are much higher than what we're able to meet. And as we go on, we rework and make sure that we adapt the targets to what is the ideal or what we are able to do. And I think the Deputy Minister has covered the area about whether there are penalties for implementing agents. They are there. And some of those implementing agents, Deputy Minister has mentioned, IDT is one of them. IDT has got numerous challenges. Our Deputy Minister and the Deputy Minister of Public Works are leading us in assisting IDT to build capacity so that IDT is able to do the work that is expected to be done. Honorable Sheikh, I think the Deputy Minister covered others, but just to say that in terms of percentages, we usually reflect what we're able to deliver, but also we honestly reflect what we've been able to do over and above what we are expected to do. And then the last one, I agree with Honorable Matropa that, maybe I must, with a heavy heart, accept that indeed we've been a serial offender of irregular and wasteful expenditure. And again, I take that as both liabilities and assets. I have acted on these. There are letters that we have written to the affected managers and have taken action. Chairperson. But I must indicate, irregular expenditure, for instance, would be building of libraries, when in fact the grant does not provide for building of libraries, provide a city for the building of schools. But you've got libraries. Money has not been wasted, but you have not followed the proper procedure. And you have not used the allocation accordingly. And the Treasury refused initially to consider condoning irregular expenditure. I made representation to them. I had a meeting with the DG as well as the Chief Procurement Officer. They've requested us to resubmit. They are prepared to reconsider after I made representation to them, and that I have added against officials who did not follow the law.
Right. I know we have time to say, but quality education. Remember. member, I'm from Higher Education and Training Portfolio Committee. What the teachers, colleges are complaining about is the quality of students that they get from basic education who do not know English. And as a result, they're not able to produce within the given time frame because then they must settle. Now that talks to the quality education. And if the president has pronounced himself in saying that education is apex priority, what are you doing about it? Because it is at the university. You know why we have a lot of students failing the first time whenever they get it? They say they have a problem with the quality students they get. So, yeah, I think you must consider that. But on your own, sorry, I'm breaking my own rules. On slide 18, you have a pilot project. Doesn't look like you also taking quality education to them. But this one was assessing, you know, English and math. And out of your target, sure, 20,000 give us 487. And it's a pilot. And because the pilot, you're supposed to really move fast on the time. So that this one is going to have a positive impact on the quality students as you want. So that's why we were talking, I'm sure you heard that. We spoke about impact and value for money. So I'm sure you hear. Yeah. I don't want to hear about how you have given yourself targets that you cannot realize and we are disappointed at that, because when you go to Flatlands, go talk to the issue and look at practical, you know, way of intervening to assist this government to achieve on this educated nation. That will take this nation, okay, educated tailors, that will take this nation to great heights. So I'm sure you can hear that. And your pilot, yes, it's a pilot, but no. He is very, very poor. I don't know who we can blame for consequence management here. Is it yourself, Minister, going to embark on consequence management for poor delivery? Fine, yeah, I'm sure you will then find a way of it. On the rationalization, you have to put time frame, unfortunately. You can't tell us every day, rationalization. We are 21 years old. You know, when the first time I heard about eradication of math school, I was an honorable member, and I did hand. And up till today, I'm still speaking that language. I know you were not there. And especially if you're coming at the time when the president has announced that we're living on a radical socio-economic space. Meaning that, brother, as you come in, you were expected to hit the ground running because you came in during that time. And you respond to the time. You see? No, that's a different. No excuse. I think you must visit your legacy project. Got 5 years contract, legacy projects, right? Eradication. We don't want to hear about this math school. Firstly, they're not healthy, but there is money and infrastructure money gets underspent. No power. No, we can't. Mm. People have been waiting and waiting for too long. And in your case, we don't want an excuse because we came at the wrong time. Radical socioeconomic. And then there, which is supposed to be coupled with innovation. So what I say, senior RTP. So please don't expect us to sympathize with you, but you came and you chose to come. Now, yeah. I just want to hear this one. You see, on the grant, we don't just allocate the grant. There is a plan that comes from the province. And then that grant is aligned to that thing. So you can't complain about the plan. It means that plan then would be your instrument to measure performance, because you should show aspiration to have this infrastructure and your ICG implemented with immediate effect. Unfortunately, it's radical socio-economic phase. And everything is going to be radical. It's like you're just hearing it, but you're not responding to the call by this radical socio-economic phase. There's desperation out there. This government needs to deliver. People, you know what? true. Somebody said, when you don't deliver, all blame go to the president. I'm not protecting him, but I'm trying to show you harsh reality. He don't deliver. And it also go to the minister, the deputy minister. He don't deliver. As long as we can have that at the back of your mind, radical socio-economic transformation phase, which requires innovation. And I see somewhere here you also expected to do innovation. I don't know whether in your country or not, but there's somewhere where I read about innovation. But okay, I think that's it. All right, then thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Indeed, you are on top of the situation. You understand the issues there. Just make sure that all the targets. We don't want to hear we over-targeted ourselves. Who says you must over-target yourself? So, just make sure that the targets are realistic. Just make sure that the information that is brought to us is accurate. Because now we had to make up like rationalization. It's a defense mechanism in the form of rationalization. We had, no, we overspent because there was no split. You see? Whether you want, we don't know whether you lie to us, we don't know, but some of us, we are students, officials can also lie, you see. But the Constitution says we must give accurate information. So you have no excuse also for the whole expenditure. Because you expected to have accurate information. That's what I'm saying, the Constitution of the country. Thank you very much. You can be released. Thank you.
May I just say Chairperson, with regard to the non-intrusive self-assessment instrument, we've developed 94, that's a good news, across all grades for mathematics and science and English. We started off with the English, in other words, to test the ability of educators to be able to carry out this interactive instrument. Now, what we've done is we have 141 teaching resource centers, and we've told our office managers there to ensure that as part of the development program for educators, they carry out, because it's not inclusive, you're not marked externally moderated. The pilot was carried out at the university, but these instruments are now being tested and they can be utilized at all our teacher resource centers. So I'm certain, I heed what you say, and certainly it would definitely improve, and it must improve. And your comment about English took across the curriculum has indeed been noted. It is part of the curriculum development and innovation, and if we don't deal with that matter, our children are going to suffer forever and ever. So I thank you for allowing us to be here. Please excuse me, I'm not being rude at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. No, you are allowed. Thank you for your invaluable contribution. Alright, shall we then move on to the next presentation, which is the first quarter report.
Mr. President, the third quarter report is divided into three parts. The first part covers Accenture, and the second part deals with performance indicators and areas of underperformance and remediation. And then the third part deals with service delivery implications from slow spending, particularly on curriculum. Our overall expenditure of the five programs stands at 31.7%. Just to indicate that the high expenditure there under Program 3 is because of transfers of funds and shelter, and that will not necessarily follow the norm of 25% pay out of the financial year. And then reasons for deviation are also indicated in respect particularly of program 2, and essentially it's again curriculum and the workbooks. I must just qualify, particularly in respect of the workbooks. We deliver workbooks for 2017 in 2016, and usually we make sure that both workbook 1, which we use for the first semester, and workbook 2 in the second semester are delivered before the end of the outgoing academic year. Well, the program 3 has indicated that the transfers of funds shaka account for that. And then in terms of program 4, again, it's due to transfers that are going to provinces as well, which do not necessarily follow the four segments of the financial year. Then the next slide, which is slide number six, is the allocation in terms of economic classification. And again, there you will see that the transfers to public entities show a very high percentage of expenditure there. And then we are giving reasons as to why the deviations, and it has indicated mainly because of transfers, but also in terms of projects, we've covered the issue of ANA, that not been able to write ANA. ANA has been remodeled, so it would account for ANA expenditure as well. Then the next one is services, and we are providing reasons for deviation in terms of services there. And then I then go to slide number 10, which is about performance information. And we're using the same dashboard indicating not achieved, partially achieved, and fully achieved. In terms of program one, except for percentage of grievances received, we've achieved that. And this one, we are attending to it. Usually we don't underperform under this. During the course of the year, remediation will follow to make sure that we fully perform. Program two, there is nothing that you underperformed in. It's fully achieved, and the rest are annual targets. And in terms of program three also, these are essentially annual targets, and still have the rest of the year remaining, except for only slide 18 in terms of the number of provincial education departments monitored on the implementation of PMKS. We've not fully achieved there. There are still provinces that are still outstanding. Program four is we have achieved or not achieved in terms of percentage of learners from public schools that are successfully uploaded on the LURIC system. LURIC is learner unit record information system, chairperson. We are working with provinces. We had a meeting with heads of departments where we raised the concern of making sure that this data is uploaded on time. But I must unfortunately report that we're not meeting our targets there. And then it takes us to program five, number of schools monitored for the provision of nutrition meals. In terms of course, the first quarter, we have not met our target, and the team has promised that the work that they are going to, that they carry out for quarter two, will ensure that what was not achieved in quarter one is also achieved. And these, I mean, the next slide, which is slide number 22, provides for a summary of underperformance and the remedial measures that we have taken to remediate areas of underperformance. And part C, which is the last part, is in respect of Karigude. And of course, some of the issues we have also dealt with under quarter four, but what we are indicating here is that this time around, we will make sure that we work closely with Public Works, because we are one government, to make sure that what happened in quarter four does not find expression during this financial year as well. Thank you, Chairperson. To the end of quarter one.
Thank you very much, sir and honorable members who have been listening carefully to this briefing. I will now open up for a discussion. Clarification questions and
Honourable Member Dr. Sisole, Honourable Member Dr. Pete, Honourable Member Mr. McLaughlin, and Honourable Member Madoke, and Honourable Member Mukwanya.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to express my appreciation of the way the DG presented, especially by being conscious that the public works and education are one government. I think we're getting somewhere because, you know, departments were always not aware of that. Second, I want to make a request for the DG to give himself time within his busy schedule to visit Akonhoek Circuit in Mpumalanga. There's no education there. All what you are telling us here, it doesn't happen. All the schools under that circuit in Bushbuck Ridge in Mpumalanga. If you can put your foot there and report that to this committee, I'll be very happy. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member Shoppers Police. Honourable Member Dr. Kitty.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Just a few issues. I'll be quick. I might not do three, but I'll be quick in my deliberation. On slide number five, just a question, because we were guaranteed, I think about 2 years ago, that the books will be, the workbooks will be delivered before the start of the new financial year. Can we get from the new DG, can we get that guarantee that the books will be delivered by the start of the new financial year? Slide number seven. We have a similar reason for underspending, namely for grade 12 examinations later in the year. If you look at the fourth quarter expenditure for 15-16, it also indicated that there was underspending because of no planning. Slide number 17. I'm referring to the percentage of SCBs that meet minimum criteria. The target is 30%, and the output indicates that none were reported. That can't be acceptable. And then slide number 21 is something similar. The output for number of schools monitored. Okay, this is an important one. Sorry, let me just finish a few more seconds there. The number of schools monitored for the provision of nutritious meals. And we see the targets that have been indicated, but it says there that the actual output is that not one school has been monitored for nutritious meals. Well, that's just the information that was supplied. And then last slide, Honourable Chairperson, is slide number 24. Again, an indictment. The reasons for underspending, DBE has not yet signed an MOU with EPWP, and because of that, the implication is that funding for 2016 may not be accessed. So can we just ask what is the reason for that and when that will be achieved? Because as we know, EPWP, it's money that is dedicated or for the poor and the poor suffering as a result of a simple paper exercise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker on the list is Honourable Member Madoke. Oh, sorry, Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't mind going on to Dr. McLaughlin. Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of things of mine that I'll restrict myself to the slides that deal with financial matters and not the performance issues. For the sake of brevity, I have a concern. I know we have an explanation, but whenever I see that the department has spent more than 50% of its budget in the first quarter, alarm bells ring with me. And I know we have this explanation about the funds of the Shark Bursary Scheme, but I would like a bit more explanation on this. Why are we spending so much money now? But this, I see, is made in April 2016 to NSFAS. Is that higher education, not basic education? Why is higher education taking money from basic education? Maybe I missed something in the big picture, a simple explanation, but it's constantly when I see these figures. Slide 6. I see the figures here, 4.63%, 7.42% on infrastructure backlogs in direct grant. We've only spent 7.40% so far in the first quarter. We really have a vast backlog in the fourth quarter because we're not getting around to doing it. And yet here we've got a very small percentage of the budget spending here. It's concerning. What's going on? Is some monitoring happening here? Are we doing proper oversight? Is the department watching what's going on? Earmarked funds, 4.58%. And on slide 8, we get the whole breakdown of earmarked funds. And I have a serious concern about the workbooks. These are scheduled to have been done in the first quarter. Now we're getting told that it's going to be shifted on later. 4.11%. I think there could be another repeat of what's happened in the past with workbooks and not being delivered on time and all sorts of things. And we can't deliver books we don't have, so we need to have them so we can deliver them. If I look at this whole schedule, and if I take a 5% leeway either way on what should have been spent in the first quarter, there are only two line items here that should fall into that category. That's the MSNP and NEDU, both to do with people. So the people get sorted out all the time. But the rest of them, EPWP is 0%. We only spent 45% in the last quarter, now we have 0% in this quarter. It seems that there's something wrong here to me. I don't know whether I'm... It's not a link up on the two, but it seems to me that there's a major problem here. EPWP, and just a question, why do we refer to them as volunteers? By definition, volunteers do it for nothing. They don't get paid. But we talk of volunteers getting paid all the time. It's a misnomer. I don't know why we're using this strange language to speak about people who are going to get paid anyway. They're not volunteers. They're workers. It's an extended work program. It's not an extended volunteer program. And that would be for nothing. It wouldn't cost them anything if it was volunteers. But just generally speaking, I have concerns about what Mr. Second Chance, 2.07%. HIV and AIDS Vicefield grant, 10%. Mass Science and Technology grant. The most important aspects of education in the country is get the least attention. Only 10% spent so far in the first quarter. It's very concerning to me. And I think it needs serious attention and serious oversight that we can bring this thing up to the north. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, for the
time, Honorable Nigel Mann, for the microphone. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Now, thanks to the accounting officer again for the report. Chair, I think my colleague has covered me around the issue of the workbook to say that it would be covered on the second part, whereas it was prioritized for the first part. I think really they need to up the pace. But also there is something that I don't understand here. 100% is a target. Percentage of public schools is slide number 14, and in the other pages is the same thing. They are talking about target for 100% annually. 100% of what? Because 1/2 is 50%, 1/1 is 100%, 100 out of 100 is 100%. If they need a target, why don't they put a number? Because the percentage only comes after you have put a number, then you calculate the percentage. So that when you really do the oversight, you know that this is a target that they put in, not to say 100%. Or 50% in other pages, they say 50%. And we don't understand of what. Maybe they must share with us. Maybe in future when they are coming to present here, they must indicate the number and the percentage. I don't know how they approve this target because they are really not necessary. You can't follow it up. Because if they come up with one thing that they achieve, it can be 100%. Because the budget is for one. So if you achieve 1/1, it's 100%. So say our humble request that maybe they must try and unpack this thing for us because we are not technocrats, we don't understand. We are taking from what we are taught at school in standard one to say that you calculate percentage out of a number.
Thank you very much for Honorable
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Okay, I would like to just raise again a general question of clarity. Looking at the section on deviations and reasons, If you look at the trend here, almost all of them, where there is other expenditure, it's called a deviation, but the reasons are given as like it will be paid anyway within the financial year. Then my question would be, is this just allowed in terms of the legislation? Because my understanding is that the 25%, the plus minus 25% per quarter is for a reason. Because it's another way of monitoring your expenditure patterns. Now, if we say, well, we didn't spend, but it will be spent by the end of the financial year, is this allowed in terms of legislation? So it's just a general thing, really, because I've seen that it is something that the trend that is being used. And then perhaps one little question in terms of non-submission of required information by provinces. I'd like to know what is supposed to happen when provinces don't submit. Is there somebody in the department responsible for this particular role? Because I would imagine that if provinces don't submit, someone should be making follow-ups. I'm not saying if it's been done, but someone should be making follow-ups, and we should be hearing that the department has done this and this, but the provinces are just not cooperative. Is it a matter of waiting for the department, for the provinces to submit, or are they just being resistant to the request by the department to submit information? Because I don't think it holds much water if we just say they submitted late. Thank you.
I've been covered by my colleagues in most of the issues that they raised, but in our last engagement with the department, I raised a very sharp issue with regard to the constituency where I'm deployed. And I was expecting a response from the department whether they ever do the oversight and the complaints that I raised with regard to the non-functioning of the school that I mentioned last time. And I will be going back to that area, and I think I will find a different situation. But I will appeal to the person that we need to get a response to the committee, which how far are they with regards to that issue. I don't know whether you still remember it. The Balfour constituency, the Bali thing. If we can get the response before the end of the month, because it's been long and we're not hearing anything from the department.
Thank you very much for your intervention, Honorable Member Manana. I will now call upon Honorable Member Sue.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to check on slide of page 21. Number of learners participating in the social cohesion program. Your target says 6,000 and the actual output was 418. And the deviation is 5,520. If you can explain to that aspect more as to if it's the 5,520, if it's outstanding, and what is the department doing to ensure that you meet your target, and by when are you going to meet your target, and which provinces are affected by this deviation. And then on the main page, number of hotspots for school, target 46, actual output is 12, and a deviation of 34. The very same principle as before, which provinces are affected and by when will that deviation
be sorted. And then, the one on page 9, I don't know if my colleagues touched on it because I was out for a moment, on matric second chance, the payments. It seems to me your reason, I don't know how to put it, delaying payments due to non-submitting of required documents by teachers, and then we just leave it there. Isn't there somebody that is following up on these documents or somebody responsible for it? It seems we just leave, if people don't submit, we just leave it there and we don't follow up on these payments. And then there was a one McLaughlin did ask, Honorable McLaughlin did ask the one on the EPW one. So it's just that one for me, Chair. And then, you know, Chair, one thing we shouldn't let the department allow to come and tell us is that you have spent this amount of money, unauthorized expenditure to this program, and it's allowed. The minister, it's just a pity that it's out. You have alluded to a statement like that. And we need to teach departments effective budgeting and stick to your budget. Because it seems to me somewhere, somehow, we let things slip. And then every year, and year in and year out, we'll get departments that will come and report to us that, no, it's because we have to use some of this money there and it's allowed like that. So somewhere I think as a committee we have to look into it. That we don't get, there must be some way that we have to figure out. Because now we are hitting them over the fingers, but meanwhile maybe perhaps it's our policies or government policies that are not in line with the project or programs of that needs to be implemented. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. If I could also just be allowed to ask questions so that we can respond to all the questions. Is it true that that teachers would have not been paid in the COVID from April? I didn't get a report. There was, it was a report on SAFM. When I got a shock, I was present after that jump from April to date. And one teacher was actually interviewed and he validated that information. Remember, we took him 6 days to get it. And can you reflect, come the 16th, you don't get your salary. Just from talking 1 month. Can you all reflect? I want you to feel this. Literally. Look at this. 15, you don't get your salary. Really expect it. That's 1 month. Now, so many months. What are we doing to these people? Are we not violating their human rights? And are we not expected to treat everybody with dignity? Is this a dignified way of treating human beings who have worked, but at the end of the month they don't get their salary? It's unacceptable. I said 1 month. You see, I'm looking forward to my, because you know that I've got stop orders. Now 1 month with my stop orders, I come to the social work, I just wanted you to feel this thing. And I tell us, if you are now responding. And then, where it is reported that the department has achieved more than 200% of their targets. I also saw this in the previous quarterly report. Now, in terms of fiscal discipline, you must explain, where did you get that money? Because it doesn't mean 200%, it means you use money you don't have. I allow that DG and talk to your manager. It's wrong. I know you wanted to please us, say, hey, you've delivered. But unfortunately, we look things in a balanced way. You've delivered, but where did you get that money? Because your own budget is for 100% time. There's wrong. So there's a wrong reason there. All right? And then, EPWP carry good under expenditure, incentive grant under expenditure. My worry is, come end of the financial year, the only way in which you are going to get up on that under expenditure. Come end of the financial year, that money will go back to Treasury, you might not get it back because the Treasury is very strict with grants. He takes it and he will take it to another province where he thinks that money is needed. So I'm trying to say, not also look where. You see, the grants cannot be used for the benefit of the people on the ground. Because it is already there, it was motivated for. It was not just given for some sucking. There was a motivation for the release of the grant, so it must go into, you know, that space and then let the people benefit from it. They don't benefit. You know what I'm talking about, DG. It will go back. You already have it. Why do you want to lose it instead of using it? And then I do also want to mention that our spending, by the way, GG, simply means you received money you did not need. Is it true? When we know that the need on the ground is big. It can't be true. Let's not say the South African citizens. But remember, we were not there when you said, I hereby kindly apply. Kindly apply for the job. Now you have the job. Why are you not delivering the job? And you promise to be honest and, you know, remember when we applied, that was still in Civil 7. At the end of Civil 7 in 1981. So, can you please respond to those things? They are really disturbing. I know you came now, but unfortunately, you know what to do? When you come in, you inherit everything. To take ownership, unfortunately. Can't expect us to sympathize with you. It's called ownership of the province. Thank you very much. If we may get the responses.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll go straight to the responses. Chair, let me indicate that I fully accept the responsibility that you demand from me, and I take it with I don't know how to put it, I like the requisite diction, with an open heart. Honorable Professor Sitore, I will follow up on the Akon Hook Act. Coincidentally, I've been visiting that district quite a lot, but helping them to improve the results. So I will immediately talk to the district director and inquire about this circuit where there's no schooling at all. I'm at liberty to see them at any point when I'm able to do so.
Surely we request a report.
We will do that. We'll provide
a report. To the commission. Am I right?
Yes, we'll do that. Honorable Flick, Honorable Dr. Flick, Honorable Dr. Flick, I can put my head on the block. When it comes to workbooks, we've gone past the challenges of books not delivered. I don't think it will happen again. But I would also concede that it takes both the national and provincial departments. Workbooks is a responsibility of DDE. We don't share it with provinces. If it is not delivered, say it's us, not provinces. The track record so far, we deliver workbooks of the ensuing academic year in the current outgoing school calendar year. The records are very clear. The external auditors are saying we deliver it close to 100%. We even pay workbooks of 2017 with the 2016-2017 financial year. In other words, by March next year, we will have paid workbooks of the year that's starting in 2017. We've been able to do that. Mr. Schumann is here behind me. He knows that he's been helping us with that audit. In some of the areas where we've not reported, I've noted that it's because it's annual targets. So the focus was on quarter one. I guess that relates quarter one. Even about the annual target or maybe the third quarter, don't be in every good thing. So please accept our explanation there. The signing of the MOU and public works, I accept. It could be shown in a zone apart. We should have done that beginning of the year. But the good thing is that the Calcutta program has not started. But we don't have to wait for the program to start and then sign the MOU. We have to make sure that what needs to be done is done before we roll out the program. So I accept that responsibility as well. It has just completed, the cycle has completed, it doesn't run in the same way as the school calendar year. It's a cycle. And you allocate hours of teaching. You don't allocate days and months of the year. And the cycle that's going to start now will also be allocated hours. It's going to finish before the end of the financial year. So we'll still be completing. We'll just finish, and then we'll take in the records of the completed cycle to SAQA to validate that. And SAQA, as soon as they are done with that process, then we start with a new process. The reason being that if you have some of the learners who have not gone through in the outgoing cycle, you can put them in the next cycle as well. That's the rationale behind it, Chair. Honorable McLaughlin, I hope you get this right, I'm sorry. Yeah, I need to practice this a couple of times, but please accept my apology case I've not pronounced it correctly.
Sir, can I actually need to say something about the signing of the memorandum with the Department of Public Works? How does it work? You are talking about the signing. Every time you sign a memorandum of understanding, or you sign one because it's one problem, leave alone the signing that will be going. I don't hear very well because the problem was there. You know, now if the problem is continuing now, but the memorandum of understanding was supposed to be in place, you know, in the second cycle now, to say that it's ready because there was the first question.
Yeah, so the MOU is linked to a cycle because the targets are not the same, and therefore the allocation is not the same. So every cycle, you've got to sign a new MOU because the targets are different.
Yeah, and then here it goes with the planning. You can't start when you plan when the cycle finishes. Already you started the plan for the next cycle. You can't explain it.
It doesn't come to my attention. It's got to be worked out at the line function and then come to me. I earlier on considered that we don't have to wait for the program to start. I did make that point. That we don't have to wait for the program to start. We can finalize the MOU even before we start with the program. For as long as we've got the direct numbers, so that, you know, it doesn't also go to numbers that do not turn with each other. Honorable McLaughlin.
For those volunteers, the so-called volunteers. I'm saying this because you said in your life, you targeted low, but the budget that you are supposed to access is 68.5 million, but you will not receive the full amount because you budgeted low. That's what is in the line of your life.
You have one? It's an employed for the budget. Yeah. This will be your last interjection, Honorable Member Madoke. That will allow a flow of these responses. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Madoke. The number of volunteers is linked to the number of learners. The number of volunteers is linked to the number of learners. And I'll explain the notion of volunteers later on to address the point raised as well. It links to the number of learners. You will have a particular target in terms of volunteers, but the actual number of learners might alter the actual number of volunteers that you engage. Because you target so many learners, and you find that when you go out to recruit learners and look for people who cannot read and write, you only find half of that. Over time, we've discovered that. That's why our target in terms of the fourth quarter was 400. And we later discovered that, no, we have overgrazed. We have overgrazed the terrain, and you get about half of that. And increasingly, we then realized that, in fact, the target is far above what the actual learners that are going to be enrolled in the program. And the issue of spending for food and Lushaka, indeed, the activity happens at HEI, Higher Education and Training, but the beneficiary is basic education. We need foundation-based teachers in specific subjects, and then we're funding those, because if we don't fund them, we don't have a guarantee that we'll get them. In fact, that's how Funza Lushaka started, even before the other bazaar schemes and so on. So we fund the program. It comes from DME. Ideally, it should be paid for at the Higher Education and Training. But originally, it came from DME because the need comes from there. And for us to ensure that the need is met, we've got to control the funding. And then the issue of... Indeed, our spending on infrastructure is low. We should be much higher than we are now. We had a meeting with implementing agents, and we tried to redirect it to them to say that if you don't perform, there will be no reason to do business with you. You either shape up or you ship out. So we had a meeting with them recently. So I expect them to improve. In fact, where I come from, in a province, I used to plan infrastructure in 18 months. An 18-month cycle, so that when the financial year kicks in, your expenditure begins, and not your planning. Your planning is done, but the expenditure kicks in. So we're trying to get that right. Earmark funds and workbooks. I thought I explained workbooks, how we work on workbooks. And again, just a small correction. NSNP is not a tiny portion of it goes towards paying for people. The bulk of it is feeding learners. 9.2 million out of 12 million children in this country are benefiting from feeding. And I've been saying to people, I want to hear of any country that's able to do that. 9.2 million out of 12 million. So it doesn't go to paying people. It essentially goes to feeding. NIDU, I agree, but NIDU also is about monitoring the work that we do, strengthening our monitoring, following on our projects. That's what NIDU is about. Volunteers, the reason why Honorable McLaughlin, why we call them volunteers, is because these workers do not receive a basic salary. They receive what is called a stipend. So calling them workers will be almost tantamount to an insult, because they don't even receive your basic minimum wage. They receive a stipend, something that in our way we're able to say, thank you for, your volunteer contribution that you're making. They just get a stipend. The metric second chance. The program is implemented beginning of the year, and it's also going to be again implemented beginning of next year before the end of the financial year. That's how it's implemented. And it will always show an under expenditure because of the way it's implemented. It's not implemented every month. It's implemented beginning of the year because it has planners who write supplementary exams. So it's implemented beginning of this year. It's going to be implemented again Yes, not financially. That's why it shows under expenditure. Honorable Dr. Madoka, slide 14, 100% of what? Unpack. You are right.
the difficulty is that you have to put everything there. You can imagine how big the report, how big the report is going to be. But if you want us to do that, we will do that. When we talk about workbooks, for instance, we are providing workbooks to 24,000 schools out of 25,000 schools in the country. 53 million workbooks to 24,000 schools in the country. Maybe we can provide that, yeah. So when we talk about 100%, we're talking about 24,000 schools and 53 million distributed workbooks. So that's what we are talking about. We'd like to qualify that as we go along with the reporting. Honorable Senoganyani, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, deviation, maybe we need to revisit the nomenclature and call it something else. I do know that if you're not in keeping with the 25% expenditure, we're using deviation. We're saying we're deviating from the norm of the financial year. Because the norm of the financial in terms of expenditure is 25% each quarter. So we deviated from the norm. So that's how we understand the deviation to be. It doesn't mean that deviation from the law. It's deviation from the norm. I thought the chairperson had also explained it when we talked about the fourth quarter. So, correct. Yes. 2%. 2%. Yeah, deviation is 2%. Yeah. No, what the Honorable Senoganyani is referring to is where we are saying we've not been able to give to 25%, but we've spent low or above. Let me give an example, the second class metric program. Ideally, we'd expect that program to spend 25% over 4 quarters. We are saying we can't. We'll spend 50%, maybe, more or less, and the other portion will be 60%. Because the program is implemented beginning of a school calendar year and beginning of another school calendar year, which falls within probably one financial year. That's what Honorable Senoganyani asked. Is it permissible in terms of legislation? It is. For instance, infrastructure. You are not expected to adhere to 25%. It depends on how the project is planned and how the expenditure is going to follow. The law allows that.
The law allows it, but you can report to us on the credit based on how far you think. We want to push and make sure that at the end of the financial year,
yeah.
We have to go by this, so we will not get the report, but we want to see if we don't monitor on a quarterly basis, just for you to, because you can't give us the report. Actually, in your infrastructure plan, you also divide it according to you.
Correct.
Yes. So that's the report we want. We don't want you to escape on that one, because we are worried about understanding of the infrastructure. So we want your report. If you can have your feedback, quarterly basis, where are you?
Yeah, and we take it here. Maybe what we need to do in our reporting, the way we're reporting now, we must, when we talk about deviation, we must indicate whether it's in terms of the project plan. It's in line with the project plan, and indicate maybe stages where we're in terms of the period of reporting. So we'll have to populate that in our reporting as well. Non-submission of information by CED. I must be woefully honest here. Woefully honest. There are instances where we struggle to get information from PEDs. And those examples we can give to you. Where I would even write to the HOD. At some point, even draft the letter for the minister's signature to write to the MEC. And I don't want to tell you about the difficulties of concurrent powers. You are in the MCOP, you know them probably better than I do. But we do get instances where provinces are not cooperating.
with all the wonderful structures and forums that we have, and the view is very simple, they don't necessarily report to us, but we force them through, we try and force them through legislation, our education legislation, National Education Policy Act, and the way to do it, you report them to the MCOP, if eventually are cooperating. But it takes months for that to happen. In the meantime, service delivery suffers. What our portfolio committee has tried to do is to get all of us under one roof, now and again, convene all of us and say, why have you not performed yet? And in that way, we are able to get both provinces and CBE under one. Nobody is able to accuse one another. We'll be so happy if that can happen. It will help us a lot. Yeah. So that they come under the same heat that we go through. Because quite honestly, many times we answer for their sins and they keep on just doing business as usual. Okay, and with some heat. Okay. Non-functional schools, Honorable Manana, I will, and I understand, is the ballet. Oh, the ballet. Oh, then I have to find out from the officials who attended the last meeting. Some of them, I think, are here. So I'll have to hold up with them. Unfortunately, I wanted to get the exact details so that I don't take time to come back to you about what action has been taken.
No, in our last meeting, we were talking about absenteeism in different schools and the way, my teachers. I mentioned a school at the Badi State at Banzo. I said, I visited that school. I even looked at their attendance register. Most of the teachers were not writing the attendance. Even the principal himself.
Thank you. I've been advised that it's handled by relevant branch, and I now know the official is Joveka. We're handling the matter. I'll make sure that we forward the report to the committee. We'll do our best to get it, even if it means driving there at a cost. We'll try and do it. We'll do our best, although we've done our oversight already, it will be extra to our oversight. Yeah. We'll do our best to get the information and then forward it. Okay, Honorable Low, the target of 6,000 vis-a-vis a variance of 5,000, I'll have to go back and find out from the line function as to whether the variation is because of learners who are not participating or what is in the variation of 5,000. Oh, I've been advised that it's actually an annual target, so wouldn't be expected to have met. It means already we've covered 1,000. So what remains for the rest of the year is 5,000. That's the explanation. So I'm sure the question that says which provinces are affected, it then follows. The 1,000 could be distributed among the 9. We can find that out for you and then give you the details in that respect as well. Okay. Learner or learner and teacher? Teacher absent. Okay. No, will get that. The second chance program, I've explained, is implemented in two ways, and that's why it shows the performance that has been indicated here. Honorable Chair, Honorable Porter, teachers who are not paid, again, I'll have to find out with my colleagues in Limbo. But I have learned in the public service that although it's almost unthinkable, it shouldn't be happening. There are always two sides to some of the stories. Even if it is true that the services of the teacher or teachers have been engaged and somebody has not done what they needed to do, I will insist that action must be taken. And I agree with you. I can't imagine not getting 1 month's salary, let alone beginning of the year up to now. It's just inconceivable. So I'll follow it up with my colleague in the proposal. He should be there. I'm not, quite honestly, I'm not. It could be the province. The person who was speaking might have been an official of the province. We don't directly deal with this. I will go and say I am going to follow up and find out. I'm not saying it's not my responsibility. It is my responsibility to make sure that teachers are paid, although they are not paid from our line directly. They must be paid on time. Otherwise, we will not achieve our targets as well. So we'll follow it up. Thank you, Paris. No, no, we don't know.
Yeah, thanks, and again, sorry for mentioning what I've been here, but it's across the country that this is happening. There are thousands of teachers that have not been paid. And we appreciate the fact that the DG says you need to look into it, but with respect, I say it's not good enough. What can we do? Or what must the teacher do that has not been paid? Because at least we here, and we say, okay, we're going to get a report, and I'm not so sure when that report is going to be forthcoming. But in the meantime, the teachers that are not being paid. So what must the teacher do? Instead, because the teacher cannot wait, I cannot wait one day. Why must the teacher wait one day for their salary?
Some of the main teachers have already been divorced for free to be think about it. So the captain can say.
I thought say it would be both male and female in a democratic dispensation, both are expected to. At the moment, my lawyer. Okay. No, what has happened previously, what has happened in the past is that people will call us, write to us, will intervene and the problem will be resolved. I'm sure that you are aware, Chairperson, that my cell phone is on the departmental website. And people, I do get calls, I do get SMSs, even I'm in a meeting such as this one, I don't answer calls. But as soon as I get messages, I get back. So we'll do our best to make sure that we intervene and we get these problems resolved as quickly as possible.
Of the administration staff in this whole process
including the junior management. That system has got to be upgraded. And this day and age, you can't paper train all the way through, perhaps at the point of entry. But then going forward, it has to be. Maybe the paper train may follow later, just for verification, because they are the goal.
Dr. Majo?
No, I'm trying to check. There are two things not linked. Department of Basic Education, national, with the province, is not linked. They can't get the information through the system.
Okay,
I know that it's Department of Public.
I know you will respond. See, small wonder we have. We don't have quality education. Remember your salary, and there's an additional incentive, bonus incentive, that is aimed at motivating people to give us their best. Now, with us, you go there, be motivated, and then the children are solved. So you see, you know, let's get this thing right just once and for all. But which country would do this? Okay.
So sorry, before you, DJ, you get in. I think really that should be actually as a matter of urgency, because if we have money to send to some board that we are belonging of some educational African whatsoever, I don't say it's not important, but if we have money to pay that, why can't we have money, or why haven't you paid those teachers? I think that should be urgent attention. It should get urgent attention, and that we ensure that those teachers get paid. And I think the Department of Education should even put out a statement and stating that all of the teachers that is affected from that haven't got paid from that period to that period, please make contact with us so that we can start investigating this. So that we can also see if it goes to people that are just calling in at this radio show, or is it a real warm body? I think the department should take this as an urgent matter, because our kids are suffering, as you have stated. Our kids are suffering by the end of the day. I remember when we were not paid in December, we were paid late, a day late. How it affected the whole program was put aside, because your debits went down late, all of those things, and you had to reconfigure some situation. So imagine not being paid for a couple of months. I think that is really, it's uncalled.
Sometimes it is. What I'm going to do, we do have a call center. I'll ask Elijah to go on here. Elijah is our spokesperson, and give out our call center to everybody who knows about teachers who are not paid, waiting for salaries, and even forward it to you. And then we'll collate that information. Because the difficulty, if you talk about systems, these are people who are outside the system. If they are not paid, they are outside the system, effectively. So if you get into the system, especially one system from national to provincial, but they are outside, it's not going to assist. So rather use our communication and our call center to get this information, and then maybe forward the report to you.
When he tabled his budget speech, to say departments must embark on a cost containment. And there's a Indian to assist departments to cut on all the services, so that money can go directly to service users. So this is part of services.
Yeah, fortunately with schools, only appoint the school staff establishment. And the school staff establishment is funded. If somebody has been appointed, it must be against the school staff establishment, which is linked to the post-provisioning model, which is funded. So the issue of money is not available, it's furthest. Unless if people follow the irregular processes to appoint. If that is the case, then you deal with culprits. Chair, I've addressed the issue of the, I've tried to address the issue of
the... Honorable Chair, I'm sorry to bring that to the DG. No, I'm basically the way we are going to approach this particular method of the unpaid educators. Maybe it will be correct for the DG to write in different provinces, asking whether there is any challenge of the unpaid educators. And then after collecting that particular information, it's when they can go on air. Because if you just go on air to say, come on, all who were not paid, and you don't know the reason for why others were not paid, we may create a problem. So it's better to communicate directly with the department in different provinces, get that information, and then when they have the clarity now, they can go on air when they have understood what are the challenges. Because going on air without the content of the challenge, I don't think it will have to be the right thing.
Okay. Are we in agreement? Honorable members, the proposal on the table?
My advice is that we do both. Given my own experience, you write to provinces, it's convenient to say we don't have anyone. But if you do both, you can get information from the province, verifying what you're getting from the general public.
Honorable member, a short story, and
then... I was saying... this thing is a matter of life and death, to be without a salary. And I would support what the DG is saying. Because I know some of the people who don't get salary. And some of them ask me, why are we not getting our salary? And I, at that point, I suspected that they are not alone. There must be other people somewhere. And I suspected that maybe provinces are not giving correct information to the national. So we must not depend on the province giving the national information, because those people who must give that information are themselves getting their salary. So you won't have any agency there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Shall we then allow the DG to round up the responses before that, because look at your time, you still have got to rush to the other issues on the table, but you have to rush to the house at home.
Okay, I hear what you say, but for this one, I don't have a problem sitting till as long as we resolve it, as long as we resolve the matter.
You should have declared fasting.
I'm sorry. Okay, a quick one. Add it to that, and you know, we can see that the DG is sincere in what he's wanting to do, so and we must support him on this one. And I'm adding to what Honorable Shabesi Tola said, is that the information should be circulated to provinces, to the schools, and then the return information, I think that's where we need to be created there, not via the same route. And maybe that's information, and there should be some mechanism developed to how that information gets to where the solution is going to be passed, maybe directly to the DG's office, and I'm not so sure if that's the right way, but what I'm saying is that it cannot go via the same channel that has been used to get the information to the beneficiary or to the affected parties, because that seems to be the problem. Because if it was so that we rely on the provinces, that's exactly what's happening at the moment, and that is why information doesn't come to. I think the DG will be surprised when he gets the responses to see how many people are actually affected.
Remember, we're following the money. So I'm also proposing that we also issue a statement as the committee.
Yeah.
This is a joint statement. You know what you're doing? Pleasure in you so that you can. need to respond to this.
Number one.
Writing exams, I don't take home to the top of the year, but some exams time. That's right. I would definitely pass without the flying color because of the pressure. You see, it's best conditioning, but it's there, so we still, you know, respond to it. I wish we had time.
The last two points which relate to the issues that you raised. I do accept the observation that you are making in saying that you underspend the allocation, it means you receive monies that you don't need. But let me give an example of a city. Wherefore? Yeah, I'm just giving it. Yeah, we don't want to lose it, but also if you spend it anyhow. Previously, that's where we are sitting. Also with some irregular expenditure, because some of them are used to build libraries. And we don't want to go back there again. I thought I must just give that example. And then the last point, correct, yeah. 200% at times, it does not necessarily mean you spend more or you got more money. For instance, if you call people to a meeting, if expecting 100 people, 200 each, it means you've got 200% achievement. And I'm giving an example of meetings that we've had. The last comment, if you allow me, Chair, now that I've tried to respond to all of this, I appreciate the observation that you've made about TVET colleges and universities. But I think at some point we are one government. I like the notion of putting everyone under one roof. We also have problems with teachers that are produced by universities. Teachers who are not delivering. For the past 22 years, teachers have been produced by universities. We also know of reports about FET colleges in terms of their performance, the skills levels, and so on. We also know the same with HEI. But countries that work together, higher education and basic education, you don't point fingers at each other. You put heads together and you resolve problems.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. But then we can do outside meeting. Can we proceed with this? On its spelling performance. I would just highlight some key issues emanating from the meeting. One, ensuring compliance with laws and regulations, which is very important to transparent and effective budget expenditure. The committee feels very strongly on issues of payment within 30 days, non-compliant implementing agents over or under expenditure, non-compliance with grant conditions, expenditure and consequent management. I think this one, KK, am I representing you correctly? Okay. And then partnership, KK, because it's because of so many stakeholders, cannot be work as usual. You need proper partnership and where the, you know, your, who you find, you know, terms of reference on how you're going to finish this partnership. Actually, you need a framework, your partnership framework. Someone has got to work on that. I'm sure you have somebody, an expert in your department. Okay, just give you a framework of partnership. I'm glad to meet you. It's a framework that at the top you start with your minister, and then your hearing committee of all the stakeholders being represented there, and thereafter, then come down to this hearing committee will agree on pillars. And you have different pillars. For example, quality education, the pillar itself. Infrastructure, all the stakeholders on infrastructure coming there, even representing ICD. Am I right? ICD, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah. That's infrastructure development. That will also look at maintenance. You see, so under this pillar. Then the next pillar will be a pillar on quality education. And then you identify all these areas, very important areas that need service. Okay. Water and sanitation, because that's another big issue at the school. Some children upset themselves when they've got a tummy problem. Can't go to school because there's no toilet. Even so you have another key that talks to water and sanitation. Then you have all stakeholders, in that field. And then you will then have technical, technical tactics under each tier. That will develop program of action for each tier. And then you then take this back to the steering committee. The steering committee will report to the political principals who endorse. And then from there, they implement and report on a monthly basis. Yes, so that if you bring these people together, you can, in terms of your partnership, I think there was a great improvement in the city. It's my thinking. You can work around it. It's a framework. Not just this. Working with public work, working with partnership. Partnership based on what? These are the terms of reference. Go and work on a program of action with all the stakeholders. So all of you understand and work in a collaborative manner. That, I think, would bring relax. Because one impact. This group, one impact, are very many and impact. Excuse me, we don't have room for this. We welcome positive progress, such as the 100% timeless delivery of web books, but I know that in your report, the buying of the web books was postponed to the second quarter, where your target was, you are going to buy the first quarter. Those are the things. Procrastination is a thief of time. Don't. Once you, then you stick to that. All right, to place, please, on this one, please listen carefully on this one. To place Eastern Cape on your priority list and consider it, especially you, accounting officer. Since you're new, you still have got 5 years. Consider it your legacy project. Eastern Cape, your legacy project. When you come in, there might be some difference that you make. So I'm proposing that you focus on this thing. You cannot be hearing all these many stories about this thing. Okay, I think you can adopt it as a legacy project. Okay. All right, finally, I reiterate that radical socioeconomic transformation entails that issues of rationalization and finalization of the ICD and innovation in how to deliver efficiently and effectively these monthly, you know, receive your priority. They must be reprioritized in the year. Overall, the committee wants to see the department succeed and want to be your partner in ensuring quality education for all underpinned by value for money. Well, thank you very much. Indeed, it was an interesting conversation. So the meeting between ourselves and yourself is attended.
Thank you very much. We look forward to the next meeting.
Yes.
And we appreciate
it. I'm truly looking forward to those reports that you promised to deliver, eh?
Yes.
The magnificent before the next meeting. Okay. Now, honorable members, you see we have go back to your agenda. Top 2 minutes. I request that because due to time constraints, we postpone these minutes to the next meeting. And then I want to conscientize you of the media statement and the correspondence on financial and fiscal commission. Just for your information.
But why not?
Good for you to have the list. Huh? To all the members. Yeah. I just want to make you aware of the
government.
And then, for the other, okay. You must tell me what you wanted to do. So remember, we said if they have
to do the
there's another meeting that is not accepted. Right? I'm saying we agreed on the accounting officers who, if they don't come, we send the bank. I have already received apologies. Then I want to quickly read these apologies to you to say, should we call them here or should we not call them instead of them waste money coming here when we're going to send them back? Now it says, this one is from Octavia M. Makua, Shepherdson Audit Committee. National Treasure. Not going to be able to take it in terms of the above mentioned letter. Okay, this one is I'm sure we can tolerate this one, eh? Because the written now is the chairperson of the audit committee from National Treasure. And then the other one is from public wedding. So the DG is not going to be here because he's also supposed to present a report to the president to the cabinet. So do we call them or we postpone? Because we want him to come and count. Can you remember?
No, thank you. No, if the accounting officer is not here, it's not going to help us because the researchers assisted us with their performance.
Yeah.
We want also to talk to them.
To the accounting
with them.
Yeah. All right. Agreed?
Agreed.
So please do change the date. Because you still want them to come, but you also want to ask them. I'm told it will have to be left hand.
Yeah.
And then, the Minister of Finance will be coming here. Yeah. Okay, the DG will be coming. He's got 2 meetings. He will start with us and ask the excuse to go and honor the other invitation. Agree? Okay, let me read the letter. On behalf of the National Treasury, DG Lumisa, would like to bring to your attention that he has to attend a Cabinet Treasury Committee meeting that is chaired by the President to discuss the adjustment budget on Thursday 15th. DG is also keen to attend the SCOA meeting and to lead the discussion on the National Treasury's quarterly expenditure report. Thus, he has agreed to split his time to accommodate and attend both meetings on the day. We'll keep you posted. Now, where do I don't know if we've got a say, control over where he starts. Ma? There's no treasure. We have 2 meetings on the day. So what meetings are those? Why don't we negotiate with public works to come earlier?
If it's
oh, they're not coming anymore. Okay.
Yeah, I can see you taking it there. We will be careful. I understand that we've said that the accounting officer must be there. But we've got a program as well, which we've established. We must be careful we're not punishing ourselves by, because we on Thursday we have two meetings. Now, if we're only going to have one meeting, or maybe nothing, but if we're only going to have one meeting, and now we must allocate another day to a meeting. I think when there's an apology, whilst we expect them to be here, if we're going to delay and postpone meetings because of DGs and accounting officers having apologies, I think it's a little unfair then. You know, maybe one should speak to them and say, listen, we expect you to be here, but if they can't be here, then they can't be here.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, sir.
I do want to agree with this sentiment. Tell you why, because you, at least we understand that they are meeting, they are in a meeting that the president and the cabinet are involved in, because they must account there as well. But what we may not accept is this story of a long arranged commitment.
Prior arranged commitment.
Yes.
Those we want to, but with the president, we've got to respect it.
Yes,
we've got to respect that.
Something to do in
the let's call them, their participants must come on Wednesday.
Okay.
On Thursday afternoon. Together with the National Treasury in the morning.
Okay. We will then also communicate with them, inform them that in future, we will appreciate where the accounting officer himself accounts and accounts to us. Yeah. At least one of the members, because if she's not telling us. So let's help ourselves. Okay, thanks. All right, so this one, in every room there's an exception. So let's treat this one as an exceptional case, and then, no, that's fine. I wanted to consult with you on this, but I couldn't just go, okay. But thank you, we have actually assisted. So I go straight to correspondence and then closing remarks by the chairperson. And I remember, thank you so much. You were so prepared.
We ask that you opening and closing remarks is email for us. I haven't got any. All the time.
Who is the public here and they must be considered management? It's coming over and over again. I can't do this one. But I must tell them it's coming. There's a high risk there. Okay. Please, let's talk and then let's talk and then All right, I'm saying thank you so much for coming. It is your presence that have made this meeting successful. But also, I must thank you for your preparation for this meeting. Whoa, these people were in trouble. And you know what? We were not beating about the bushes. They're so factual. They could not run away from all these questions. Now, I must thank you. If only this robust engagement that are going to assist the department to deliver on their mandate. It is this robust and follow up. So yeah, thank you. And you know who contributed in making us this sharp. Everywhere very sharp. Is the support staff.
Yeah,
very good. So thank you so much. Except that we have to correct that one mistake. Of the opening remarks and the closing remarks. Thank you very much. This is Spencer again.